Hello and welcome back to Not About the Weather. This is Mitch, and you might recognize me as the dude, because I suppose I'm the only dude on here. But that's fine. I like doing that. That's cool. And today I have joining with me Natalie and Karen. Now, I want to start off with you, Karen. How are you doing? It's Friday night for both of us. You excited to be here?
I am. I'm kind of bummed because it's St. Patrick's Day and I'm not doing anything. Not that I'm a big going out kind of person, but I was kind of looking forward to actually maybe being in Chicago this weekend to hang out with Danielle, but it didn't work out, so have to figure out another weekend to go see her.
Oh, it's so cute how you hang out with Danielle now that you're living closer to her. I like it.
Yeah.
We need to have Danielle on this, honestly. That's what I kept wanting to mention to you guys.
I have suggested it. It has not panned out as of yet, but yes, I've suggested this. I want to hear the story about Danielle lurking outside your house, trying to get inside,
from your
Oscars party.
That was so, like, well, she was coming up to visit for the Oscars party that Kristen and I were throwing, and it was, like, four people total, so it wasn't a big deal, but it was an excuse for Danielle to come visit. She only lives 4 hours away from me, so we're like, it's time, here's a good excuse, let's just do it. She was supposed to arrive at 10 in the morning. I woke up on time, I was getting ready, everything, I hopped in the shower, I, like, finished up some cleaning, so I hopped in the shower a little bit later. But I knew, like, hey, if I'm out by, 9:45, then it should be fine. She's supposed to be here at 10. Well, she arrived 5 minutes before I got out of the shower. I come back to my phone positively blowing up. She had called me 3 times. She left me a voicemail. She tweeted me. And then other people started tweeting me.
And like, Danielle's outside your house.
Yeah. And everybody thought that I was sleeping. And I was like, no, I wasn't sleeping. I was just in the shower. You're early. This is not my fault. So I don't feel guilty about it. But it was cool. She just hung out in her car for like 5 minutes and then I let her in.
I sense a theme coming on. This is like social media and its uses or how it fails, Natalie. Yeah. We're going to have fun with that. This is good. We're getting the theme
started.
It was
so funny because, like, Natalie, you tweeted at me and then Danya started tweeting at me and
she tweeted just screaming, Karen, like just randomly, like on Twitter. And I was like, and then I kind of was like, are you outside her house right now? And she's not answering the door. And she was like, yes. Oh my God.
So we also have Natalie.
I suggested she throw things at the window, but,
Who's suggesting you throw things at a window? So welcome to you.
Hi.
Hi. Are you as much of a house wanker as you were the past episode? Has that changed any?
No, I posted a picture of the table, and now I'm sad again.
Oh, it's so beautiful. Oh, I shouldn't bring it up again. I'm getting teary-eyed thinking of it. I have to say, though, Natalie, the note you put in the show notes about us being boring old people who like watching home improvement shows, it's such a theme. That's once again. I keep having these conversations with you guys about how old and boring I'm becoming.
I could do a whole episode about that. I could do a whole episode about, like, things I love and hate about lifestyle television, about, like, cooking shows and renovation shows. Yeah, probably at some point. This podcast doesn't have a shelf life. We've got to come up with a lot of episodes.
The world doesn't stop turning, and neither do we. So we'll tell you how you can get a hold of us here. You can get at us at our hub info, because we're both the soon to be ending, I suppose. Not another Teen Wolf podcast. God, I'm getting our names confused. And we're Not About the Weather, so we're in that hub at NETW Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Gmail. Our websites that you can find all of our episode information on is notaboutheweatherpodcast.com. And we also have a Tumblr account where you can send us asks. Apparently, non-asks are a thing that's going to happen with this. And that's fine, because we have debates about non-asks.
Yeah, there's an anon-ask at the end of this episode, which is it's a little spicy, so we'll have a look at that.
I'm excited, so do or don't keep the anon-asks coming. I suppose we'll deal with that as that does or does not happen, but do check us out at netwpodcast.com. That's the website also that you can find. Natalie, so we have a long form and a short form URL, is that what's going on there?
NATWpodcast.com is basically like the splash page hub website for both of the shows, where you can, like, they both have a little little profile page, and then you can go on to the archives of each show from there. And then
specifically
the full...
for our podcast, that's notaboutheweatherpodcast.com, which, yes, has two T's in a row. It may look like you misspelled it. Natalie and I learned that the hard way.
We did learn that the hard way, and we had to submit a correction to the podcast hosting company because we fucked it up the first time.
We missed a T.
But they fixed it very nicely, so we're continuing to use them.
So that's all good and fine, and now we're going to decide how we're going to do this episode. So I'm sure you've listened before. We do our hypes and our gripes, things we love, things we don't, and we're going to decide that with our coin toss. Heads is for hypes first, and we have a tails, so we're doing our gripes first. I want to start off with Karen's. I'm very excited to talk about this one. You wanted to talk about Scream Season 3. Let's get into it.
Yeah, I thought you'd want to discuss this with me. Mm-hmm. So, news just came out literally a few hours before we were recording this that Scream Season 3 may reboot the entire series.
Oh my god, what?
Hmm.
When did this happen? Like today?
Today.
No,
so,
Karen,
okay,
no.
Quick backstory. Mitch is a huge Scream movie franchise fan. Right. I've seen the first one and that's it. And I only watched it after I learned that Scream was coming to MTV. Now, I usually watch a lot of MTV scripted shows because Teen Wolf started there, and I'm interested in the way that they handle that sort of thing. And I started really getting into the idea of Scream coming on as a series and how they would handle that. And
poorly is the answer.
I started getting... interested more in horror, in the horror genre, so kind of dove right into that. Bex Taylor Klaus is awesome, and she's a star of the show, so like definitely stuck around for her. I loved the first season. I really liked the second season. The Halloween episode was trash, and I'm really mad about it.
It was
so bad for a lot of different reasons.
Do you remember when I called the twist like 10 years ago before it even happened? Yeah.
It was so, like, even that aside, like, it was just a bad story, which is really frustrating because Scream has so far been pretty clever. And even if you figured out the twists, I think all of the lampshading that they've been doing and the way that they break the fourth wall has been really in line with the Scream movies. And it's an entertaining show regardless. And I really like violent things. So it... fed right into that.
Should we be concerned? I don't know.
I mean, you've known me for quite a while now. I haven't tried to murder you yet.
And you did have plenty of opportunities, I guess, so.
I did, for both of you, actually. Mm-hmm. So, you're still alive. You're welcome. Anyway, we learned today that Scream Season 3 may reboot the entire series. They're getting a new showrunner for Season 3, which is not a big deal because Season 1 and Season 2... had different showrunners to begin with. And there wasn't really a huge change up in style, so not a huge deal. But they're talking about completely new cast. Willa Fitzgerald, who stars as Emma, like literally the main person of the show, is she's just been cast on Behind Enemy Lines, a new series on Fox. And Bex Taylor Klaus is doing Voltron, although she's been doing Voltron while Scream's been airing, so like not a big deal. But apparently the cast has been quietly told to, you know, look for other jobs, and they are doing that, according to Will Fitzgerald. Oh, Noah. I don't know. I haven't really looked into what everyone else is doing, because like I said, I just wrote up the article like right before we started recording, so I haven't looked into it too much.
Did you have this picked out as a gripe before that news broke?
No. Okay. It's like, oh, well, this is perfect. I need a reason to complain about something. I really want to complain about this. But it's frustrating to me because Emma's story isn't over by the time we end the Halloween special. There's a twist at the very end. Very important character shows up. And you're meant to believe that this is going to lead into Season 3. Season 3 is going to only have 6 episodes compared to the 10 and 13 that Seasons 1 and 2 had.
Which is good.
So we knew Scream was on the way out. Like, I figured Scream Season 3 would be the last season. If it wrapped up Emma's story, at least decently, like, I was going to be totally fine with it. But now they're talking about rebooting it, and I just feel like it's going to rehash what we saw in Seasons 1 and 2, and it's not going to give us closure on the characters that we've watched, you know, 20-some episodes for, and I'm mad.
If I'm made without Brooke, I'm upset. Although they did kind of send that character off, too. They're like, you're going to school. Bye. So I do see the exit, Karen, honestly. Like, as much as you're saying that the twist in the end, it's not unlike Scream, I think, in its own right to leave that kind of twist hanging. Because the show doesn't... the movies don't exactly solve all of the mysteries still. There's still some characters that are left in limbo about whether or not they're good, they're evil, if they were in lieu with the killer, or if they were just wrong place, wrong time, whatever. So that kind of stuff feels right to me, honestly. But where I think that you and I are going to agree here, too, is that... Why are we doing this now? Shouldn't we have done this season 2? If this is an anthology series, do it American Horror Story style. Start that season 2. Don't do it season 3.
Which we were wondering if they were going to end up doing that, and then found out that they weren't, and the characters were coming back, and they had more story to tell, which was great, because by the time season 1 ended, you didn't have all the answers. You had most of the story, but there were a couple things that were missing, and that made me excited to go into season 2, because we didn't have to start over with caring about these characters. It was people we've already seen live through all this trauma, and now, like, I really love this show, and I know not a lot of people do, but I really love this show, and if we have to start over, I'm not sure that I'm going to care.
We shouldn't care, and we shouldn't love it, but we do. What's wrong with us? And, like, things. I'm joining your league. And I shouldn't say horrible, because honestly here, this show is beautiful. I love the cinematography of it. I love the set design of it. And I do love the production, mostly, of it. I think overall that it's a very well-polished product. Mm-hmm. I think that it does fall flat when it comes to holding together. Because Slasher, as the show says itself, its satirical character here does say, you can't do a Slasher as a TV show. It won't work. And I'm kind of like, same. So, like, that's a big lampshade, okay? That's the entire concept of your media. So how do you get past that? And that's where I'm still... I'm like, okay with this, but I'm like, we should have done this season 2, you know?
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is the numbers did tank in season 2.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were like for the Halloween special, but I imagine not that great. So they're looking to do this probably in order to get the series back up in the higher numbers and keep it alive. But at this point, like, is it worth salvaging, or is it better to just finish out the series and then... concentrate on something else?
Well,
MTV has no problem canceling television shows, thank you very much, Eye Candy.
Oh.
So I don't see why they're holding on to this one, other than maybe just the recognition of the franchise.
Well, that's what's tough here, is that it feels like we're almost starting to stomp on the series and make it just a cash cow, which it never really felt like, because it was always fighting against that stigma, which is what it should be doing. It made money because it didn't want to, in a weird way. But now that Wes Craven has passed, the creator of the Scream series, it's like, okay, don't we need to just, in his memory in the very least, put this to rest and call it a day? The Halloween special enough was very off-kilter for what this TV show has started off with, but now that we're going into a season 3 and we're starting with a new cast, it's going to take a lot of convincing for even fans of the show like you and I, Karen, that love the show and are still sticking in with those dwindling numbers. How are we going to even care about getting into this?
That's the big question.
Because, like, they failed-ish once. They didn't fail all the way, but they were failures, I could say, right? Natalie, I heard you trying to chime in there, and we just steamrolled you because we're very excited.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's just I know nothing about this series at all, so I don't really have anything to say. Just that two of the writers' room of Scream, both who also wrote on other MTV shows, were poached by Supernatural. So sorry about that. Two of the Supernatural writers this season, the new ones that have come in for season 12, not Davey Perez, who was the one we had on this podcast, the other two, Meredith Glynn and Steve Yockey, are Scream alums. Meredith did the whole first two seasons. She did four episodes with her credit, but it was, I believe, somewhat of a communal writing room, somewhat like Teen Wolf's, as opposed to with Supernatural, where they write solo episodes not as a group. And then Steve was on only season two, but he also wrote for Awkward, and Meredith also wrote for Eye Candy. They are obviously not part of the show anymore. Meredith is friends with me on Twitter and has expressed interest in coming on this show. So,
which is where I wanted to say,
ask
guys,
ask her these questions, basically, if you want to.
Well, that's where I wanted to say,
like, I
will
talk to her for 100 years about these shows.
That's where I wanted to say, like, it feels like I'm okay to feel critical about this, but I'm scared to, because I'm like, who do you know that wrote
on
the show? I feel horrible commenting, even.
No. I don't think that we can do that. Like, obviously, if there's something that we universally hate, we're not going to invite anyone on from the show. Karen's basically only here saying that she is a fan of the show and that she doesn't want it to get ruined. Like, that's fine. It's not, that's, I don't think that's going to be a turnoff for anyone who else who actually likes the show, you know?
Ladies, not a problem. I think what we can compare this to was kind of in the end of Glee, when they were like, are we going to do a time jump? We're going to New York. And the show felt like it needed to end. That's where I'm at with Scream. I'm okay. Once again, if I don't learn that twist, I think there's a certain pride in knowing when your show needs to go, and in anything in life, knowing when it's time to end while you're still good. Because if you go out on a bad note, that's all anyone's going to remember. We only now remember and talk about how Glee went out on that horrible literal note sometimes, right? So it's like, please do us the favor as fans and don't give us new. We don't want new. We've had enough. We're good with what we have. We'll enjoy that. We'll rewatch that. And that's okay. More is not always best. And the quality of the show, unfortunately, has dwindled. And I think, Karen, if it does continue to dwindle in season three, I personally can't find myself being interested in seeing whodunit. If it's so obvious, like it has been, especially for season two, from the beginning, then I'm just like, okay, what do we need to do here to even save this? Is there a way? Because if you know the killer, that's the show. You're done.
Is it aimed at people younger than us, do you think? Mm. Or is it aimed at sort of adults?
It'd be pretty tough for, like, I think maybe like a 13-year-old to watch it, because it's, like I said, like there's throat slashing and gutting and everything you can imagine.
Literal gutting. It's pretty gross.
Cool.
It's like, cool. It sometimes turns my stomach, and it's still TV-14, yet Walking Dead, I watch without batting an eye, if that says anything.
Hannibal, I watched without batting an eye.
Oh my, I couldn't. Really, I couldn't. The mushrooms, Karen, are why I stopped, okay?
I know, the bees were the worst, but let's move on. Sorry.
So, Karen, in terms of what would you suggest then for season three? How would you want them to come in and rescue the plights of season two?
I think they need to just give us something very unexpected, and I think they need to conclude this story. I liked season two. I don't think it was as strong as season one, but it was fine. I didn't necessarily guess the killer, but I definitely had an idea of who it could be. I think they do a really good job of setting up red herrings, and some of them you can see past, some of them not, but that little shred of doubt in the back of your head is what makes these shows and these movies so good, is because you can never quite 100% guess who it is, and when it comes out, you're like, oh yeah, I totally knew that, but you know, it could have been somebody else, and you could have said the same thing, because they set it up where there's always multiple possibilities for the killer. So the Halloween special fixed one thing, I think, and destroyed about 10 other, but that's fine. I'm kind of counting that as like a separate entity, and I'm hoping, if they do keep the same cast, which I really don't think they are, because Willa has moved on and all of that, but I would just I want a conclusion to that story, and I guess they can give us a couple of lines or something that finishes it, but with the way that the Halloween special ended and the direction they were obviously moving in for season three, I don't know how they're going to make this make sense.
I know. Well, honestly, it's almost to the point. So much like The Walking Dead, I do hate watch some shows, and it's because I like talking about it with friends or listen to a podcast about it. That's probably going to continue for Scream Season 3, because I have a good podcast to listen to. I think it's just called Screamcast. And they're very, like, kind of I say this as a positive. They're homespun in a way that I like, because they're not very produced about it, and their conversations kind of feel like friends talking to each other in a natural format. Mm-hmm. And it feels like I'm talking to you, Karen, when I hear them talk. It's kind of fun. So if anyone likes the show, Scream, they might want to check out Screamcast and enjoy it as you will. They do movies as well, and they do other horror events, like I Know What You Did Last Summer kind of stuff. So I think there was a Freeform slasher show as well, but I ignored it on purpose because I was like, I'm already way too invested in one cheesy slasher show. I can't do another. Do you know what that one was called, Karen? Do you remember that?
No. What one?
I think it might have even been called I Know What You Did Last Summer. Which would be like, what? It's like called Camp, I don't know, whatever it is. Regardless, if you like a slasher TV show, fine. I have trouble swallowing it. I think Karen does too, right? Is that what we're coming at?
I mean, I don't know.
Maybe you like the show more than I anticipated.
I really love Scream, like, very, very much. I just think that they've taken a couple of missteps, and I was hoping that they would correct it in season 3 and had high hopes that they would, but at this point it looks like they're looking to kind of wipe the slate clean, which I don't think is the smartest thing to do, but if MTV is invested in this series and is looking to, I don't know, do it better this time around, maybe it'll happen. You know, maybe it'll be in their favor, but it's a risk to take, that's to say the least.
Well, I do agree with you there, Karen. It's a risk, and I think MTV's known for taking risks, especially in its scripted dramas. So that's fun. It's always exciting to stick around and see what they're going to do next. And now I'm just left wondering if there's going to be any Teen Wolf transition, if people are done with that show and wanting to watch another horror show on MTV. Maybe they'll check out season 3 if they hear, oh, it's a reboot, I can kind of jump in now. So that could help the ratings, honestly, that Teen Wolf does end.
Teen Wolf never felt like a horror show to me. Even when it had horror elements, it was always more of a fantasy series. Yeah. So I could see people jumping over to something like Shannara Chronicles before they jumped over to a slasher show.
Or The 100, probably.
Yeah, although that's on CW.
Yeah, definitely.
And less creature.
More drama, I suppose, or like soap opera, it seems, from the looking out of it all. But that's probably going to sharpen a lot of pitchforks, so maybe I should take that back.
Wow.
I mean drama in a good way, like you write a drama.
Yeah, headline of this podcast, Mitch calls The 100
Stop.
A soap opera.
We can't. Oh my god, no. I can feel the burning of the torches now. So, Karen, is there anything else you wanted to say about Scream Season 3 before we move on to our social media segment of the podcast, I suppose?
No, I actually feel pretty good about getting all of that off my chest.
Me too, and I always appreciate our conversations about Scream. Natalie, I also appreciate my conversations with you, specifically about the niches in social media that we appreciate and the ones that go away. Cool. So I'm going to talk about mine first. So mine is that social media has become the worst, and I mean every social media has become the worst. We're going to start off with the biggest one, in my opinion, Facebook. I know, Natalie, this may not be on your radar. I'll explain why maybe it should be. There's a certain wonderful thing now that if you click a notification to follow it through to see what someone wrote on your wall, let's just say, it doesn't show it. And the only way to show things on Facebook sometimes is if there's a comment on it, because that's their hierarchy. That's how it starts to show. So the entirety of its concept doesn't work to the point where I got... Did you guys ever hear about Peach? Do you know that social media app thing?
Oh, yeah, for like 5 seconds, yes, I heard about Peach. And then I forgot about Peach, yeah.
I must have blinked and missed it.
Exactly.
Yes, I think so.
My thing has been... I've had this running hashtag joke with my friends that whenever I reach moments when Facebook simply isn't showing a wall post, I just write like hashtag Peach 2017, like we're all gonna transition. Like I can still believe in it. Yeah. Like a so that's where Facebook is the worst. I'm saving the doozy for last, Natalie. I know how we feel about this one. So something I didn't like about Snapchat recently is that they added the ability to add photos in your camera roll. That ruins
that
and you could save
the point.
You can you can save photos from it. The whole point of Snapchat is that it's an in-the-moment, eventful photo or events, whatever, video you're taking. And then from that, you're not supposed to be able to save it. But now they blatantly allow you to, so it's literally just a text message app. That's it. Like, what else could you call it but its story elements? I guess that's its most unique element, but maybe not. Because Instagram has a story element, fine, whatever. I know Facebook's picking up one, too, somewhat soon. Do as you do. But Instagram, Natalie, they don't show their posts sequentially anymore.
And Twitter's doing it as well, but Instagram is the worst because Instagram, it's so blatantly obvious that what they're trying to do is keep you on there for longer. They're trying, and because they're adding more ads. So nearly all of these, in the last couple of years, both Instagram and Tumblr have really upped their ad content. Like, as in, you see sponsored posts and advertisements in your feed, which, I mean, it's really nice when social media doesn't have that, but those have both happened in the last year or so. And with Instagram, what I started noticing was around the time that the ad content came in, it was also around the time when they stopped doing it chronologically. And so basically what I find is, and because I am an obsessive, have to read back to the start of my feed type person, that's becoming impossible for me on nearly every single form of social media because of how much they're fucking with it. And it just makes me either anxious or give up on the social media. And I don't really like either of those options because I love Twitter when it works. Twitter is my favorite thing that's ever happened to the internet when it works.
Same.
But Instagram is like you scroll and you don't know how when you're done. Basically, you don't know when you've seen all of the stuff that's been posted since you've been gone because it's not in order. And so you keep going just to be sure. Or it'll change. And you keep going just to be sure. And the more you keep going, the more ads you see. And I think even in the last couple of weeks, Instagram's ad content has doubled, basically, like as well. Like it used to be one per scroll or whatever. It's now so much higher, even very, very recently. And I just hate it so much. I just the lack of chronology is just insane to me. And I just don't understand why you can't opt in. Like, you know, even on Facebook, you can show, like, say, show most recent. Like, you can't opt in to fucking have it in chronological order. And it's just freaking insane to me. Twitter has started doing the same thing, at least with the original app, like with the actual Twitter app. It, you know, there's all of these in case you missed it, or they like do comment threads attached to each other, which is kind of useful, but it's still not chronological.
Yeah.
I just want to read Twitter the way I was reading it in 2008, where it's just in the order that the tweets were posted.
Yes.
Is that too much to fucking ask? I don't understand why. That's such an, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And there's got to be a reason for it. Like, there's got to be a reason that they keep changing it.
I can't explain Twitter at all. It's really like,
the functionality goes from, you know, a simple program that had a purpose. And obviously when it starts becoming something that is more monetary, like so it starts to become something that makes money, you know, from advertising or makes money from whatever, then they start making these weird fixes that make the experience like way more convoluted and not actually, I don't know, maybe they thought people weren't reading from the bottom of the feed up or whatever, but it's so weird. And every time that, you know, Tumblr has it as well. Tumblr's still vaguely chronological, but they, like, again, they have ads and it's, you know, it's whatever.
Yeah, let's Tumblr out of my complaints here. Not from just lack of experience, because I do know what Tumblr is and I'm on it enough. But I'm not, like, so, I think, Natalie, you're definitely on it a lot more to know the difference of what
Tumblr
I should be complaining about.
Tumblr is problematic to me for so many other reasons. And, like, partially because it's just really difficult to see, like, details of a post, like a source or, like, even the date it was posted on, unless you look for it. Like, it's not actually that great an archiving system, full stop. Yeah, so I don't like that, but
it needs, like, a permalink button. The permalink button shouldn't say notes. It should just be permalink and date on that. Like,
I like chronological, simple blog format posting on every type of social media, whether it's a picture one like Instagram or whether it's Facebook or whether it's microblogging like Twitter. Just show it to me in the order it was posted, reverse chronological, and I'll go back to the start and scroll up or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just want to know that I've read everything. I don't understand why this is such a difficult content.
I get stressed out on Instagram. I almost don't even, you're right, I don't even use it anymore, because I'm like, I literally click on specific users to see posts that were like 10 posts in the past week where I'm like, where was that? Where was that?
And exactly. And it's this experience of, I feel like that more and more that every part of the internet is catering to people with short attention spans, that it's trying to make it a more like dip in, dip out experience. I don't know why that's beneficial to the platform, but maybe they think that that's beneficial to the user. But I'm not that kind of user. I'm a freaking OCD completist. So please fucking put it back, because who cares? Stop catering to the lowest common denominator. I don't have time for that. It's like, I just hate it so much.
Oh, and Natalie, please never play a Pokemon game. You do not want to catch them all. Oh my God, steer clear.
Oh my God, I will. But anyway, yes, Instagram is the worst one. It's really terrible, especially because, as I said, the ad content has gone up 2 or 3 times in the last little while. And I just want to read. I just want to see all the pictures. I just want to see all the pictures in order, even if an ad's there. I don't, whatever. Like, I just want to know. I don't want to see that this was posted 6 hours ago, and then this was posted 2 hours ago, and then that was posted 9 hours ago. It's like, no, they're in the wrong order. Why? 17 minutes ago. Why 17 minutes ago coming further back on my feed than 6 hours ago? Like, one that posted 6 hours ago. Why would you do that? Just why? Who gains? So I'll tell you who gains. David Jones Store Australia, a department store, they gain because their fucking ad is between this picture from my friend's concert and this picture of Charlie Carver at an art gallery. And so I've had to scroll past the ad to get to a more recent piece of content. And I think that that's why. I think it's to keep you on there longer and keep you scrolling for longer to make sure that you've seen everything. And so the more you're scrolling, the more ads you see.
And I do know that on Twitter you can do sequentially still. It's just kind of hidden in their settings a little bit. But you're right on Instagram.
Yeah, I know. But I have that. I have the sequential one.
Yeah.
And I mean, something like Uber Twitter, like there are lots of like third-party Twitter apps that are actually like do keep it more chronological, but they do lack some of the other functions of Twitter. So you can get it chronologically on Twitter, but I don't know why they keep adding all of these things, like, you know, you in case you missed it, or like people you know liked this tweet. I'm like, okay, just, I know how to control my own internet experience. Stop trying to do it for me. So I don't know. Again, I feel like it's catering to people that may be like a bit more like vague or not vague, like a bit more like not as savvy, and it's like, hey, we're helping you, but I don't need that, therefore I have very little tolerance for it, which is really probably quite mean. But I have been on Twitter since 2008. I am not an early adopter of technology or digital functions at all, but Twitter I was on for a long time, and I really get very annoyed. But Instagram is just the worst. It's just so bad.
You saying the word boils my blood.
And everyone really pushes back. Like, everyone, like, when that happened, everyone freaking flipped out, and they didn't change it back. Like, I don't know why. Like, I don't know why they would just, like, it was such a bad reaction. Surely that would be make you kind of rethink your plan, but no.
Do you think that made Apple rethink their missing headphone jack?
Oh, no.
But that was already a gripe of its own on one episode.
Ooh, it deserved yes, it. No.
Like, yeah. So,
anyway.
Karen, how are you about this?
Basically the same. I don't think I can say anything that you guys didn't already say. But, yeah, I don't like it either, because I'm the same way, Natalie. I like to jump into Twitter specifically, and I used to be able to, you know, every couple of hours go in, scroll back, catch up on everything, and not only is it a good way to get like news and stuff, but to keep up with my friends, and now like those tweets are lost unless I go to their specific profiles. And it's just not like, I love you guys, but like, not worth my time. Like, that's a lot of people and to go catch up on.
It defeats the purpose, because the point is of having the blogging, microblogging, is that you see, like, you know, what everyone's doing, or you're reminded of it or whatever, and it's just so horrible and inconvenient, because it's really and the less reliable you know it is, the less you then go on and do it. And so the less you're like, oh, I'm not. It's like, why bother trying to catch up on Twitter today? Because it's all not in the right order anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's, yeah, very much, very much like
that. Can we put an honorable mention in here for Facebook News and how unreliable and how shit it is? Because it's a lot. Because I don't like their headlines. First off, they don't match the content. They often can have a headline that's like, oh, I don't even know. Like, let's think of something completely unrelated and then put it with another subject, and that's what they'll choose. I don't get it. Like, the hashtag will be like rhinos, and then the actual post will be the Denver giraffe just gave birth. And you'll sit there and you'll think about it and you'll move on because it's not worth thinking about anymore. Facebook News has always been such a hot mess. And it used to be nice because I used to love when you could kind of sneak preview and just look at the picture if there's like new photo from Moana released, and you can just like hover over the hashtag, you'd see it, you wouldn't click on anything. That was nice. Assuming they caught on to that and they wanted people to click on stories for whatever reason. I don't know what benefit Facebook gets out of that, unless they're in the pockets of whoever. That is, they took that functionality away, so you can only hover and you don't see the picture, and that really upsetted me. That really upset me when that went away, because I used to just like that was it's such a common thing, like a still from a movie or a game or something is released, but they took that functionality away. So the only good thing about this unreliable news source of Facebook News went away, and it's like I don't understand what committee there needs to be to make sure that social media is good and stays good and doesn't become Peach. Because we don't need Peach. We don't want MySpace either. We don't want like Facebook to become that MySpace. Feels like all of these types of media wants to become. Like they're actively seeking out to become an irrelevant form of media. I don't get it. Why do they want this? So that's our soapbox. I've soapboxed out myself here, guys. Do you have anything else to say, Natalie or Karen?
Nope. I don't understand Facebook Marketplace. I don't want to go into it, but I don't know why it's there and why they keep trying to make it a thing. I have lots of things I need to sell, but I don't, like, is this the way? I don't understand. And I feel like that LiveJournal, which was my favorite kind of social media, you know, before Twitter and stuff like that, like as a blogging platform, and it's, I guess, the most comparable to Tumblr and also, I guess, to, you know, you in terms of having a profile page, in terms of like listing interests, and in terms of then, you know, having your own blog, and the functionality of joining communities so that you're talking in a communal space about stuff, not just the communal space being, you know, your own page on the website. I feel like that died out because of lack of attention span. I feel like that died out because people were not committed to, you know, to blogging long form, and because social media became something that everyone used, not just like internet weirdos, like you know, with smartphones, with everyone is using social media for news and for like having profiles and stuff, that LiveJournal was more for people who were always kind of a bit, you know, for whatever reason, like very, you know, communities and stuff for every single thing in the world, but for people who were committed to kind of internet culture, and now that's sort of not like that. It's kind of the way that social media has gone is generally like it's like making it's, you know, it's widening the pool of people who are using social media, and therefore what's required of it becomes very different because it's not all of those people that are committed to actually slogging through long-form blogs or stuff like that. It's not just internet culture people. It's civilians, and they're catering social media to civilians because everyone uses the internet now. And I just hate it so much because I just want it to work in a way that's that it used to, basically, and I just,
they're tiny,
it's exhausting.
There are tiny peeks into, I think, a more functional world here. While Facebook Live is horrendous in terms of notifications, no, I do not care that Teen Vogue is going live for the 10th time today just to discuss whatever, I don't know, whatever Teen Vogue needs to discuss live. That was a thing for a bit. That was a bit obnoxious. I think they got on to that pretty quick. It took off notifications for live videos if you wanted them. That was fine. But I do think live videos have shown up in a good way in... While there's a lot of piracy going around, unfortunately, or fortunately, for a lot of movies I've seen a lot recently, there have been a lot of great events covered by just the people, like protests of, insert protest here, like Dakota, whatever. It goes on to any event. People will be there. They will be live videoing it. And it's nice. It makes me feel like you can't stop the beat, and I stopped myself, so I stopped the beat myself, do you know what I mean, though? It feels like that even amongst a shitty platform of any form of social media, we'll still find a way to make it cool and relatable and fun, so that's where I find the one silver light in here, that maybe someone at Facebook is thinking about this kind of stuff, and they're like, maybe we shouldn't make such a shit platform, because there's a reason MySpace failed. So definitely, Natalie, I'm with you on the whole idea, like, I miss the forum life, if that's what you're referencing as live blogging. I know it's more live
journal. No, yeah, it's kind of going on from forum. It's, you know, it's the fact that your personal profile, as opposed to a forum, like your personal profile is more of like long form blogging and not like this kind of short attention span, like people are sort of dedicated to it. But anyway, oh, it's just, I don't know, Mitch.
That's been a long time coming, Natalie. I remember you getting really angry about Instagram and threatening to quit them back on Twitter, your favorite platform, quite a bit ago. So I'm always happy when we're able to do a little bit of catch-up here. And when we're playing catch-up, there's always a good update, because there's usually something else bad that happens when you're doing something like social media. So I feel very relieved. I do feel like I got a lot of that off my chest there. Natalie, related to social media, you have a gripe that is specific to internet friend ghosting. Please do explain.
Yeah, and I just, you said that, my stomach just swooped. Because this is a very, very emotional situation for me. And so basically my gripe is exactly what I said, is internet friend ghosting. And ghosting, for those who might not be aware, is when someone... who you mainly contact with online completely blanks you, as in like cuts you off, completely stops speaking to you and everything like that. So like, you know, or as a wider action, deletes their whole account, like deletes their whole internet presence. And I want to talk about this because it's something that happened to me with someone about 6 months ago, and I was kind of just like holding out. I basically said, like, I was like, I need to talk about this, and I'm not going to like name names or anything like that either. But I wanted to talk about it for so long, and like some people know about it privately. And I was like, I'm going to give it 6 months. If nothing changes after 6 months, I'm going to talk about it. Like, because I need to tell this story. And so after that period, I will talk about it. And that has passed now, and in conjunction with that, I have also had a really good experience with like a fandom friend situation. So I decided to put them two of them together as a hype and a gripe, which you guys will hear about in my hype as well. But yeah, so this is to do with Supernatural, as is everything I talk about these days. And I can't remember, Karen, do you know about this?
I don't think so.
Because some of the guys, like, well, Courtney and Brooke know, because they knew this person on the internet via me as well. And so that I couldn't remember how many people I told about it at the time. So basically, I was friends with this person on Tumblr. I met them on Tumblr, and I met them 2.5 years ago now. So it would have been like in the middle of 2014. And I met them in the Captain America fandom, and she was really smart and cool, and like not like a BNF type, like, oh, I'm trying to, you know, get in with this cool person type thing. But she was really cool. She basically started basically weirdly because I asked a friend of mine was at a Joss Whedon Q&A and asked Joss something about Bucky not being included in Age of Ultron. We met in 2014. We were friends for around two years. It started out like, you know, us talking about comics, us talking about stuff like that. Eventually kind of talking about stuff a bit personally, or she would blog. She actually used Tumblr in quite a long form way and would actually blog long form issues about her life. She was in grad school and was having real trouble, like, with the people she was living with, who were kind of like being quite like weird and abusive. She was very not that well mentally. Like she was quite open about that. Like, you know, it's medicated and had like a therapy animal and stuff like that, and was not that stable. And it was something that she talked about online pretty frequently. Yeah. So I knew her for around 2 years, and again, through the Captain America fandom, she wrote brilliant articles. Like, she would write both just meta posts on Tumblr and articles on her website that were like fandom analysis. She was a college professor, and wrote a lot of like papers for submission for, you know, journals about fan culture and stuff like that. In the last year, in the lead up to Captain America Civil War coming out, we became closer, kind of like not just talking randomly on Tumblr and like messaging each other. And there were periods where she like would go, like she would like vanish for ages on Tumblr, and I would kind of notice, not in a hardcore way, like I wasn't stalking her, but I'd be like, hey, are you doing okay? Is everything okay?
Yeah.
Started becoming closer in the lead up to Civil War because, sorry, Karen, she had really horrible Tony Stark friends. Like she had friends that were like the bad version, or the bad kind of like defending everything about Tony's bad behavior and like just really hating on everything else about the Marvel universe. Really, really not nice stuff. There's a lot of kind of weird abusive arguments in there, but obviously it doesn't apply to you. And I do like Tony. So she was like very affected by this for some reason. She was very affected by the way that like other people that she knew, like in her internet friendships, not even internet friendships, like apparently people she knew in real life, but like she like couldn't cope with them online and stuff like that. She was like, no, I can't be a part of that. So she was kind of talking to me about the stuff she wanted to talk to in fandom, which was fine. So it went from Tumblr to Twitter DMing to eventually WhatsApp, and talking every day, talking back and forth like I do with you guys. Like one of probably the top five people I was talking to 8 hours a day constantly on social media. Oh, yeah, very, very close. And it gets worse, Mitch. It's going to get much worse.
Oh, my God.
And she's the reason I started watching Supernatural. So I
was what a twist of a knife and of the story.
It's her big – yes, that was her big fandom aside from Captain America. And the way that she talked about it in general, she didn't, like, beg me. She kind of – or anything like that. But she certainly encouraged me. And my first – and I'd always – One day I'll watch Supernatural. Was a very big fan of Misha Collins as a person for like 5 years or so because of his internet culture behavior. One day I'll watch Supernatural. She was the crux for me starting to do that. And so for the first 8 seasons of me watching Supernatural, which went from like June to I guess September when this falling out happened or whatever, I only talked to her about it. I did not publicly engage with Supernatural. I was not writing about Supernatural for Hyperbole. It was just me talking to her, and that was – I was really happy about that. I was terrified of the Supernatural fandom and was really happy to have someone who, like, had all of this history and was like, hey, read this, do this, like, whatever, literally being pretty much the only person I bounced off with it. But it was at the point where, like, for example, I – met up with her before Comic-Con last year. We went to Disneyland together because I was considering going either to Disney or to Universal with Karen, Jen and Laura to Harry Potter World. And I ended up choosing to go to Disney to meet up with her because I knew I was going to see Karen and the others the next day. And that this was like my only chance to hang out with her. And that we were like at the point of like, you know, talking about our lives. I was like reading and editing her teaching statement to apply for jobs and like sending her links to help get her dog trained that was being like really violent and stuff like that. Like it was not just fandom. It was constant commentary on each other's lives, extremely close. And we went to Disneyland together and decided to stay in a hotel together so we could watch basically the introduction of season 4 Supernatural together, which for those who watch the show is when Misha, when Cass is introduced to the show. That's where I got up to. I was kind of like, okay, I'm going to finish season 3 before I get on the plane to America, and then we're going to start season four in person. And there was this whole big thing that the person she was going to Disneyland with was like making, because she was meant to be going with someone else. There was this whole big thing where that person was apparently like crazy manipulative and abusive, and that she couldn't, basically this is someone apparently she'd known since high school, but this person was like really exploitative. Like this person was going to have my friend drive her from where she lived, which is in another state, to San Diego just to drive her there. And they were going to go to Disneyland and my friend was going to go back home, like not attend Comic-Con, just basically because this person apparently couldn't afford to fly or something like that. It was weird. Anyway, point is, it sounded like this really horrible exploitative thing. And I was like, no, can't have that. And I basically became, for my friend, the most actively manipulative moves that I've ever pulled. And this is why, this is part of why I was so upset, because I fucked over this other person so badly, this stranger that I didn't really know, but that my knowledge about was that that she was really screwing my friend over. I basically ended up organizing it that, because my friend was like, the other friend was really pushing back. Oh no, I don't want to, I want to just drive on straight to San Diego after Disney. I don't want to do this. I don't want to pay for another night in a hotel. Basically, I paid for the hotel for all of us. I organized for us to all get the train down to San Diego and had to like pretty much force this person onto a train because apparently she'd never got a train before. Don't know. Because what she'd wanted originally is for them to go to Disneyland on a Monday, I think it was, to stay in a hotel the night before, go to Disney on the Monday, drive from Disney to San Diego on Monday night, drop off the person going to Comic-Con, and then my friend was meant to drive home to Arizona, so 7 hours, on Monday night overnight. And I was like, that's what my friend agreed to do because she didn't know, she felt steamrolled by this other person or whatever. Anyway, I became so actively manipulative, like kind of like accidentally making things happen that would orchestrate my friend not having to do this, with my friend like secretly texting me and being like, what do I say? How do I get her to stop and blah, blah, blah. And so I basically pulled this real dodgy move in order to help my friend. And it kind of ended up working, and I'm sure the other person felt very put out and stuff like that. Even though when we were at Disney, this person was a bit grumpy just about life, but I didn't really see that much of an issue with her, so I don't know what was going on. It's more an example of that I was so willing to drop everything and do everything to help this friend. And on the day at Disney, my friend was freaking out about being around this other person, like apparently like the drive down there, like she'd been not even saying stuff directly, apparently she just couldn't handle like this person's existence because she'd like got all in her head about it. She was taking drugs all day, like prescription, like anxiety pills, like to the point that she was like zoning out at different points. This is my friend, not the person. And stuff like that. You know, she was like sick in the middle of the night. We went to Denny's.
Can we fake name them, Natalie, for the story's sake? Can we fake name them? Can you make up a name? Is that okay? Because I think I just don't want to lose track. I get it. Because I saw you stalk yourself there.
I mean, we're almost past the part where there's another person involved. But the person who was the person we were trying to get my friend away from, you can call them Kay. And my friend, you can just call my friend. So
my friend and Kay, got it.
So basically, yeah, my friend, this is all just like window dressing of basically I, number one, spent a lot of money, both in that I got us into Disney to free by knocking off the debt of another friend of ours who worked at Disneyland who owed me some money. So number one, got us all into Disney for free. Number two, paid for the hotel so that they wouldn't have to drive immediately overnight. And number three, ended up making it that we all got the train from San Diego, Anaheim to San Diego, which is like a really short drive, a really short train. And I really like taking that train so that my friend can drive straight home from Anaheim instead of going to San Diego for no reason, just to drop this person off. And was very actively manipulative, spent money all to help my friend who was like having a not exaggerated like nervous breakdown, was like drugging herself. And I don't know why exactly, because the person was not that bad. So Kay was really not that bad, but I was very much on my friend's side and wanted to help her. We ended up getting to watch the episode at like 4 a.m. after I had brought her off a ledge at Denny's, and she was like sitting out in the car just about to take off. Basically, it just ended up just being incredibly erratic, and that this girl, my friend, is not having the best grasp on handling the situation, and just that her judgment of situations and stuff was very erratic. Leo also did an amazing job of being like very manipulative in pretending to basically be like very cheerful and dumb and pretend that she didn't know anything was wrong and be very like puppy-like buffer, if you know what I mean. Like, yeah, let's all just do this. Very consciously playing that part.
To get into what you wanted to do so that you could then...
Not even just what I wanted to do. It wasn't about like, hey, we want to go on this ride or anything like that. Or, oh, it was that this... What it looked like is that this person had manipulated my friend into doing this, you know, like 15-hour round trip drive without offering to pay for any gas, without actually having them come and stay at Comic-Con, and expecting her to drive home immediately after going to Disneyland. So we were trying to keep my friend...
I know no one like that in my life. I've never heard of a single person.
We were trying to keep my friend like healthy and safe and like not have her be exploited like this. And I didn't know whether this other person, Kay, was like actively trying to be manipulative as well, or whether they just hadn't occurred to them and stuff like that. But the fact that like they weren't going to pay for any gas for that whole trip and stuff is just, anyway, moving on. That all happened. It's just an example of what I was willing to have done for this girl, which is to, because I will help any of you that much if you need it, but usually it's very blunt and stuff like that. I was like lying and manipulating this situation in order to help my friend. And so that happened. And then like the rest of Comic-Con, she was like texting me and being like, oh, the friend Kay is manipulating me about not being there. And like, you know, showing me stuff that she's bought. And I'm like, okay, I don't really know what's going on here. Point is, it became normal. You know, we ended up, we out-logicked that person. Like we basically made it so that she didn't really have a leg to stand on to demand being driven to Comic-Con. We, you know, we kind of made it make sense that she should be getting the train, like in a kind of utilitarian way, like, hey, all the luggage is not going to fit in the car and we're getting the train, so why don't you just get the train with us instead of letting her drive you when she's not actually going to the con? Like, it doesn't make any sense, that kind of thing. Which is totally true, but it was an active manipulation rather than just logic that we came to. That's all window dressing to what the actual problem was. Since that time, we kept in contact. You know, my friend and I kept in direct contact. Again, the same kind of thing, keeping on with Supernatural, keeping on with life, becoming very close, you know, talking about the episodes I'm up to. And she would, like, give me context about the fandom, send, you know, what was happening at the time behind the scenes, what she's excited for me to see in the show, all of that kind of stuff. And then we talk about fandom in general, how it's changing, again, like Tumblr and LiveJournal, all that kind of stuff. Lots of me helping her calm down about job placements, lots of her me kind of bitching about problems that I was having with various stuff, and, you know, lots of stuff about internet drama. We never had a fight. We had a few like philosophical differences in terms of what we like or don't like about fan behavior, but never in a way that wasn't a conversation that we talked through to like a normal end. And I'm talking about stuff like caring about the writers and showrunners versus not, like about how much weight should be given to canon, or whether fandom has a vibe of negativity due to backlash, you know, that kind of thing, which we've obviously seen with Teen Wolf and stuff, Karen. And, you know, how important the fourth wall is and stuff like that. The most personal I ever got was, like, she's had periods where she basically, like, she was a fic writer, like a fan fiction writer, and she's deleted entire social media platforms, like, not just locked down, but she's, like, deleted totally, like, all of her fic from the internet, or a whole account, like a whole Tumblr account, and literally deleted the fact that things ever existed. And I've kind of been like, I could never do that because I just feel like that's really like trigger happy and nihilistic, and I could never ever do that. And it makes me sad to think of something being like permanently gone, because it probably meant something to someone else. And she was also a bit like judgy of me not believing in death of the author, because I'm really bad with death of the author and a lot of critics really believe in it. I really struggle with it. And also that it's pointless for fans to theorize about behind the scenes stuff, like trying to she had a real disconnect between like the actual creation of a show like Supernatural and then what appears on screen. I was kind of like, it's important, like who the writers are in the writer's room actually is going to affect the content of the show. And she had a real disconnect between that. And I'm kind of like, I am a journalist. I'm a television journalist. I have TV writer friends. That's kind of like how I think about things at all times. But it was not weird. There were kind of moments of weird erraticness or contradiction or repetition from her, which I kind of like noticed in retrospect might have been like moments where she wasn't that well. Like she was kind of in a, maybe at like one point she was medicated and one point she wasn't, which is very noticeable, especially after I met her in person. So like, you know, she'd say something she hadn't realized she'd said before, or she'd contradict something she hadn't realized she'd said before, or she'd like change track really quickly. Anyway, the point is around season 8 of Supernatural for me, which was in September, and around, I guess it was like some promos were coming out for the season 12, coming out, I kind of just one day on WhatsApp sent her this, like, you know, I saw this video. I was like, oh my God, where did this come from? And it was like a private crew video, like their crew cuts, like, you know, cuts trailers from raw footage and kind of puts them out in like a guerrilla marketing way, like not through the CW. And I sent it to her on WhatsApp, and not only did it not, so it didn't get read, and then I noticed her account picture was gone as well. So basically she had deleted the app. She deleted WhatsApp without telling me or anything like that. And she completely basically equivalent, she only got WhatsApp to talk to me. So basically she basically hung up the phone call in as a metaphor. And a couple, like on Twitter and a couple of days before, like again, I'd tweeted something at her and she hadn't replied. But she completely deleted WhatsApp, sort of cutting off the conversation with me, and then just started blanking me on, she'd already deleted Tumblr in general, and she started blanking me on social media, on Twitter. And I was just like, what the hell, like, what the hell is going on? So, like, and I got worried something had happened. Like, I got worried that she either to her phone or to her, because she's had, like, as I said, she's been very both physically unwell and had, like, real trouble with mental health and stuff, and I was worried something had happened. And even if it was just like, hey, I need to peace out of talking about fandom so much and I need to kind of not be engaging like that, which, you know, hanging up the phone with no warning is still not a great way to handle that. But I knew she had knew for a fact she had like big stuff coming up, job placements. And I didn't want to make like a weird confrontation and add to stress, like, hey, are you not talking to me? So I kind of left it for a week, and then I left it for 2 weeks, and then nothing happened to her. And she actually upped her fandom engagement in public on Twitter, like talking to people, like other, you know, other fans on Twitter and stuff like that, but still kept flat out ghosting me. And I was just like, okay, so this is me. You're cutting me off specifically on purpose. Something I have done has made it that you don't want me specifically anymore. After our friendship was more than that level, I thought, and I have no idea what's happened. And I was literally bursting into tears about this at various points, like for about a month. I had a couple of dreams about it. Like I had like anxiety dreams about like it getting confronted and resolved and stuff like that. And I have no idea what happened. I did not end up chasing it up because I ended up getting past the point of anxiety to the point of like, fuck you. If you're going to do that to someone, you are not a good person. And I like, yeah. If she came now and was like, hey, here's what happened, I would have to have a really fucking good reason to do that. But after that happened, that's the point where I started basically engaging publicly about Supernatural, and when I started covering it for Hyperbole. And my entire coverage of Supernatural for Hyperbole is a fuck you to her. Basically, that's the only reason I'm doing it. It's a living well is the best revenge thing, because she was clearly so... Yep. Pissed off about, like, this is the thing, I don't think she liked I was a journalist, even though she was totally fine when I was writing about like Captain America comics and stuff like that. She like read the articles and never had problem with that. I do not think she liked that as a journalist in general, that I had, like, connections to do interviews and stuff like that. I think it made her start feeling, like, really, really not comfortable. Not with me, but, like, I don't know. Like, I don't think she liked it for some reason. Even though she'd known the entire time she'd known me that that's what I did. And that that's the way I engaged with fandom.
Do you think it was something about her feeling inferior?
Especially
in Supernatural fandom, you see?
I don't know. Or that she didn't like that I was having my own opinions and that they weren't guided by her. I do not know what it was. But I've got a very strong feeling because around the time, just before it, there was some talk of me potentially interviewing a couple of people from Supernatural, not big stars or anything. It was at an Australian convention. Tim Omundson, who's a fantastic actor, he's been in two episodes of Supernatural, and it was very, very conceptually mentioned. Basically, there was a question, there was a debate. He played Cain, like the biblical Cain. There was a debate about, like, he compares Dean to himself and the people in his life, Cass, Sam and Crowley, to the people in Cain's life who he ended up killing to become to become what he was. Mm. And there was very, very strong metaphor, and I was like, I was kind of like, if it was the actual season he was in, I would totally ask about that in an interview. And she was like, no, you can't do that. Why would you expect that? You can't put someone on spot like that. I'm like, no, it's literally the content of the series. If he was doing a press room for that series, yes, you could ask him that. It would not be a big deal because the Supernatural conventions have really strict question rules and stuff like that. They have really, really, really – oh, yeah, yeah, that's a whole other issue.
Oh, boy. Point I feel is, like I can hear you and Caitlin go off on a whole Supernatural gripe.
I don't even want to – this isn't about Supernatural. I mean, it is, but, like, the issue – that's a whole other story. But I don't think that she liked that I was a journalist. And it's funny because – I know that she lurks me. She still follows me on Twitter. And a couple of times recently, she's accidentally retweeted something I've retweeted. Like, she's retweeted something from my account that has been... Like, I've retweeted something, I think it was about the Women's March, and she's retweeted not my own content, but from my account when she maybe hasn't realized I was the source and could see her.
Do we consider that a sub-sub tweet?
I don't know. Anyway, she lurks me, so she clearly knows how engaged I've been with Supernatural since she fucked me over. And it's interesting because I kind of sit there going, does she think, oh, yeah, I'm well shot of that. That's exactly what I knew would happen, and now it has. She doesn't realize that she's the cause of it. I would have been perfectly happy with just her forever and not engaged with Supernatural publicly. And I don't understand, like, anything about it. Even the fact that she has outright told me that she's, like, deleted entire social media accounts and stuff like that before is surely a warning sign that, like, if you told someone, hey, I am that unstable or I am that erratic or whatever, I am – sometimes that's what I need to do, surely you would not then do that to them because they know what you're doing, if you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Not stop people.
Really?
No, really? Definitely not. Because they don't see their own faults.
I don't know. It just
you can be highly aware of your faults and continue to do the same things over and over again.
That too.
I don't know.
Because some people don't want to improve, Natalie.
Yeah, she was not well. However, this was beyond. I've spent a lot of time processing this, and I've spent a lot of time talking to other people about this. And she's not. I know that she was erratic and not well, but I also know what she was actually like in terms of her personality and opinions, and this went beyond just erratic and not well to a dick move that doesn't deserve to be forgiven potentially, and not that she's coming asking for forgiveness or anything like that, but like I had this very long kind of thing, like, hey, do I send an email being like, hey, like, I've got a feeling something's wrong, but I just want to check that you're, like, okay, or if I should, like, go in, like, how dare you do this, or, like, you know, any of that. I ended up getting to the point where I didn't want her back because I did not feel that what she'd done was acceptable, and I don't feel that even if she was very erratic that she'd get a pass for this, because again, as I said, it's not just like, hey, I've deleted Tumblr. It's, hey, I've hung up the phone directly on our line of content on purpose and publicly upped my engagement elsewhere. So you know exactly what is happening. And I don't know, it was incredibly traumatic, and I don't use that word lightly. Like, I was very, 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 very fucked up over it for quite a long time. And then apparently decided to cope with that by becoming the most intense supernatural journalist on the internet.
And I will say, like, you were talking about living well is the best revenge, and I think you are. I mean, you know, I don't watch Supernatural. I've seen, like, yeah, 8 seasons, but I gave up on it a while ago. I'm intensely fascinated by your take on the show and the articles that you write, and I've seen, I don't even want to say gradually, because I feel like once you started writing about it, people just started flocking towards you, and the retweets and the likes that you get on some of the things you share are more than, you know, the interactions we ever got with Teen Wolf. And yeah, I'm really proud of what we've built with Teen Wolf. So
yeah, I think, yeah, for sure,
you know, Supernatural is a place where you fit really well. And she, for whatever reason, I don't know, but I mean, I think you're doing well, you're living well, and it's, yeah, her own fault if she doesn't want to be involved with that.
It's just crazy, because it is such a terrifying fandom. Like, there has been some nastiness, like, with the coverage as well. Like, people who really haven't liked what I've written being really disgusting, which is really common in this fandom. It's common in every fandom, but this one is really bad.
Yeah, like, you said,
because
so,
it's very big. It's the biggest, I mean, it's the biggest internet presence for a fandom, pretty much. Like, that's the most, like, highest ratio between, like, people who actually watch the show and people who are engaged on a fandom level. It's
bigger than
very,
Claim.
Very high ratio. And, pardon?
Bigger than Claim.
I think it's worse than Claim. I think the people are meaner and crazier.
Oh,
than
my
Claim.
God. How do you do that on the daily? I couldn't.
They're just unbelievable. But the good people are really great. But I don't understand, like, but again, as I said, I was not planning to do that. Like, I was very much enjoying the show, and I was very much hoping to keep it private, because I didn't want to have, I hate fandom drama. I hate sticking my head above water in a fandom. I like my articles getting a good read from normal people, but I didn't really want to be like a fandom presence, which I now am. And people are really nice about it. Like, the people who are nice, but it was not what I wanted at all. But apparently if I can't have her, my other option is engaging. I was basically willing to trade up the way that I really love to engage with something I love, which is to get to do interviews and get to meet the cast and get to write about my opinions or podcast about my opinions. I was willing to trade all of that, like, for her. Like, I was willing to just keep it to that. But even my discussions with her about reality, about the writer's room structure and all of that kind of thing, just really, she never responded well to that. She always responded really weird to that. And I'm like, so I don't think she liked engaging like that. And I don't know, it was just such a long-term friendship and then such a close one. And then the factor of what happened at Disneyland, the factor of what I was willing to do for her, the fact that she then, like, 3 months later did this to me, I was just, like totally ruined by it, basically. So, so yeah, I don't know. It was a traumatic experience, and that's why I'm here with Supernatural. And I am quite happy in doing that now, you know, like, I'm excited to be doing that now. But if she ever happens to come across this, or if anyone else ever happens to know her, it is not a fulfillment of the fears she had about me being a journalist. It is a reaction directly to her behavior. So, yeah, I don't know. But have you guys had any kind of, like, weird friendship happen like this? Because it really shocked me. I really struggle to make new friends. My only friends really are you guys on Hyperball, and then my group of friends who are somewhat based in the UK, who's like a group of people who I've known for like 10 years. A couple of them are Australian who now know that group as well. But yeah, so I really struggle to make new genuine friends. Like, there's lots of people I chat to on Twitter There's actually one girl who is now my kind of private conversation person.
Yeah. With, like, outside of your normal life, just kind of like someone that you can just, is this normal? Yeah, is this cool? Or how are you?
Fandom. Like the, she's kind of not replaced that person, but like, she's like the one person in that I actually like trust legitimately to have private conversations with, as opposed to just like, hey, this is a cool thing on Twitter. But yeah, really struggled to make new friends. So the fact that this happened and I thought it was so good and then it fucked up is very distressing to me.
But it's almost like a breakup. Well, it feels like a breakup, doesn't it? And yes, I have. And Natalie, I have, oddly enough, been on both ends of this, and you know both situations, of which I can't mention now. I'm sure Karen does too. So I understand what it's like to feel on both ends of it, and I knew that for the time that it was necessary for me to ghost, it was for a fear, which I don't think you're in, and that for the other time that I was ghosted, I was hurt for a bit, and then I lived well. I did. So that's where I think you're brave for sharing your story as much as you have, and even if you don't think you are, because that's a very personable detail of your life to get into. And I personally kind of just leave like any of the extremities of any of my fandom drama out of it, because as soon as they come up, I feel like it just bites me. But like that's where I'm saying you're brave. I can't say I would share that much about my own life, not to scare you. It's just saying that from just even opening up, you know, like maybe privately I would to you guys later to my own life. But I commend you for opening up about it like the way you did. That was, it's relieving to know that other people have felt the same way as I have, especially that feeling on being on the receiving end of that. And that's where I did want to mention that as I did have to do this once for someone that I was a bit frightened by, I felt the need to do that only because it was just becoming a bit of an obsessive kind of crazy level. And
yeah, that is not what this was.
No. So that's where I'm saying that's like the one and only justification I found in my own life to see that that needed to happen on mine, because I came to the point where you remember, Natalie, I didn't feel normal anymore. And that was, it's a different story. So I appreciate, Natalie, that you are coming together and putting your thoughts into a good place and saying, like, I am so going to kick Supernatural's ass in a good way. I'm going to do great coverage. I'm going to have all my passion. And from my interpretation, then, you're saying all of your love and all of the appreciation you used to give toward her, you can now give in your articles, and you can now give to other people who the door is now open to, because if that door's closed, you know, maybe your new friend on Twitter is that new door that's open. So I'm happy for you that you're living and learning from this experience. And I will close off what I'm saying with some really, really good advice that this 90-year-old woman gave me at my job on the phone. Instead of nowhere, it's just, you know, grandmas do this on the phone to me because they love me and I love them. She said that if you live long enough, you'll learn that you'll never know what to expect next in life. She really wanted me to take that to heart, and that seems to ring true here. You didn't know any of that was going to happen, but now don't you feel so much more, I suppose, savvy or knowledgeable for knowing, okay, maybe those are my red flags. If someone's able to do that and just shut out entire pieces of social media because whatever, that's my thing, that they may do that to me one day too. So you learn a lesson there, Natalie.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I really felt like that, like being aware and a part of how erratic that she was or the problems that she had meant that she would tell me if she was having them about me, but apparently not.
One would hope.
And I'm just glad I didn't lose the show over it, because it could have gone there, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm just glad that it didn't become I can't watch the show or I don't want to watch the show because it's associated too much, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm too upset about it.
Isn't that the weird thing her? Though? Like, so
and in other circumstances it would have. There's tons of stuff that like is ruined for me because of like a personal experience. But this, by that point, they were already mine. Like, they weren't, like, apparently I didn't know it until it happened, but they weren't just hers anymore, if you know what I mean. It was like, I had enough of it. I had enough of my own connection rather than sort of just bouncing off her. So,
Natalie, do you know that when I need to cry, I turn on the last 5 years soundtrack and I bawl my eyes out?
Oh, God.
And I still will do that. I mean,
that's a freaking nasty show. So, yeah, fair enough.
Can I just say, too, that I do hope you and I will have a conversation about that show in particular, about the last 5 years, Jeremy Jordan included, because I think there's a lot more to delve into there. And that's where I do appreciate what you're saying here about, like, you're keeping your media, even if it came with, I'm going to call this a bad breakup, maybe. And I do that same thing with the last 5 years now for my own personal bad breakup of romantic relations, because I find that it almost is like, it's almost its own live well. It's like, fuck you, you're not taking this from me. I like it so much, and you don't deserve to take this from me.
Yeah, for sure.
Gilmore Girls is that too for me, by the way. That was my second breakup show.
Oh, really?
Yes, and of course I have this intense love for it. At times it's hard. And I commend you once again for sticking in Supernatural as much as you are. Because here's the thing. I feel like you may not realize even, maybe not, but how much that show reminds you of her until you do kind of... I know how you said you stick your head above water and you're in it and you're present and people are there reading your material. If you go underwater again and then you go out of that, you might then see your reactions and your articles even and your interactions with other people about Supernatural as being that replacement or that feeling toward her. So I do just caution you to be careful of how you treat your emotional state and Supernatural, because... if there's a change there, you might associate it with her again. It might come back up in its own way because it was such an intense relationship.
Yeah, well, I hope so. I hope not. I mean, but, we'll see.
You'll be fine. You're strong. You are, Natalie, and this is cheesy, but I always do this. You are so strong. You are so incredibly strong. You're someone I look forward to speaking with because you give me strength, and this story also gives me strength.
Well, Karen, I'm now just sad that I didn't come to Harry Potter World with you and instead I went to Disneyland with this person who fucked me over.
Yeah. See, you always got to stick with me, Nat. I will never leave you.
I know.
Karen
but
is
that was golden. my gripe. So my gripe is that happened to me, or the concept in general of people doing such a thing.
So now that we're okay... I'm going to stick with this theme of I want to cry because I'm so empathetic towards someone else's plight in life. I'm going to go into hypes, okay, guys? So, Karen, Karen, are you good on the story? Do you want to mention anything else?
No, I feel like we need to pump this back up.
Yeah, sorry about this, guys. I know that was a really long explanation of, like... It was like a wall of text in voice form, like of me telling that story. But it's really screwed with me last year really badly. So, I gave myself 6 months, and now it's 6 months. So here I am.
You reminded me of Denzel Washington's monologues in Fences, because he just goes.
Oh, God.
And I'm really interested. I'm just like, when's the end? He won an
Oscar. I ain't winning the Oscar for this story, am I?
What's the podcast?
But thank you, I think. But sorry, listeners, if that was a bit too, like, explainy rather than them asking me questions, but...
No, we gave them names, Kay and my friend, so we're good.
Sorry, that's a bit confusing. Yeah.
Hey, you're fine. So I'm going to keep with the crying, teary level, but in a good way, Natalie and Karen. Karen, you said let's pump this up. Let's find a way to do that. So there's a man named John Bernthal, and he's an actor that you may know in The Wolf of Wall Street. This is a hype, believe it or not. He originally starred in The Walking Dead, and his character was Shane. He was the main character's best friend, and he's the one that rescues Rick's family while he's in that coma in the hospital. So he comes in, and he's best friends with Rick, and it's like, oh, so bromantical. And it comes to the point when Rick's son Carl falls into peril, and this actor comes out with this performance. Karen, do you know what performance I'm talking about?
It's been a long time.
It's when, so there's this reaction that this actor John Bernthal has where he's playing the best friend of Rick, but it feels like they are not just like even brothers, like they're just such intense. Natalie, kind of like how you explains the end of House, those kind of friends. That's the level.
Yeah, it kind of basically in that episode. Yeah. So we said that the end of House and also for me, Steve and Bucky is that kind of friendship that whether or not it's romantic.
Yes.
Another romantic relationship would never fly because no one else will ever be the number one priority in that person's life. Like, it would be disingenuous for them to stand up and be like, hey, I love you, woman at a wedding. This is my, you know, you are my one and only, because they're never actually going to be the top priority in someone's life. Is that what you mean?
It is. And that reaction is so intense when you get it, especially with men, for a reason that we were discussing prior to the episode recording. And that's what this actor does. John does a really good job about showing what some may describe as like a feminine energy, but I don't. I describe it as a very sensitive and a very open energy in someone that appears very physically strong or very tough. But when they open it up, your floodgates will start. So he's doing this scene with Rick here. So it's kind of like an emotional scene. It's like, your son's going to be fine. And it should have been a simple scene, honestly. But the way that John presents it here, it guts me. I cannot watch that episode of The Walking Dead because I cannot stop crying. It's so weird. It's something about his specific reactions. He's really good at, you know how the deaths aren't sad in movies, but it's the reactions of the people around them. That's him. That's this actor in a nutshell. So when he does that in The Walking Dead, I'm crying my eyes out. He's like holding Rick. His foreheads are together. Their foreheads are together, and they're just, you got this, bro. And it's just, but it's not bro language. It's so emotional and beautiful and, you know, wonderfully acted. So he's on my radar, and I'm like, okay, great. And anyone familiar with The Walking Dead, I'm just going to go out and say that this is the last Walking Dead spoiler that there is, so that's fine. There are full Season 2 Daredevil spoilers coming up, because Daredevil Season 2 has been out for a year tomorrow, which is weird. So do be aware if you want to not know anything about Frank is his character in Daredevil. So he's on my radar. He comes in as playing this character, Frank, who is a war veteran, and he has lost his family. And at first you're like, oh, all right, that's sad. And he's kind of psychotic. He's killing people. I can't feel anything for this person. Wrong. Because it comes to the point when he is seemingly on his deathbed, and he's had this altercation with Daredevil. So Daredevil's laying him down in a graveyard, and it's after this big long brawl, so you're really emotional into that as well, because the fighting in those scenes does what it does to me in Atla in that show. It's like, oh, they're fighting so much, I just want to cry. So I'm already there. And then this actor pulls out the performance of the century in, like, comic stuff. I don't see this anywhere else. So, Karen, you know what I'm talking about now here as well. He starts referencing a story that I'm tearing up thinking about it. His performance is, oof. He relates a story of how he discovered his daughter had died. And he makes you feel like you are fucking there. Oh my God. Guttural sobs were coming out of me at this point. You can still hear it in my voice right now. This actor, it's almost like playing the game of Operation. You're trying to be so careful watching him. You're so in tune with every little movement of his eyebrows that they flicker or however it goes. And as soon as you're like, you think you have it and you have your pliers down there, he'll hit you with this new emoted thing, and you buzz, and then you're crying. It's so weird. He has this very, very specific reaction in me, as once again you can hear. Now I'm all embarrassed, but regardless, he goes into the story, and it is memorable. It's probably to the day I die. The way that this actor performs that role of Frank, and of course his evolution there on after, I need to have everyone and anyone PSA'd. You need to watch this performance. You need to just get to this episode. And I did pull up what episode it was in, so if anyone wants to really just jump in and see it, that's fine. But this is in the episode 20... Is this... Oh, God, I'm so bad at this. I had it pulled up, then I got emotional, and I scrolled. Isn't that so bad? I will find it after I'm done my crying. regardless, do go watch this, guys. Someone else talk so I can find it and recover. Karen, you jump in and do something.
You tell me about Frank Castle from your perspective, Karen, because I have not seen this show. Oh, you're so sad about it.
Oh my God, I'm gonna cry. I'm muting it, guys. I can't. I'm muting.
I just get really smiley when I think about Frank Castle, which is horrific because his story is so tragic. But
I don't know. It's this thing about when you meet him, you think that he is, I mean, unless you know ahead of time who the Punisher is, like, you think that he's this bad guy. You think he's this awful human being who's just out killing people in cold blood, no reason. And I mean, he is amazing at what he does. He is really good at it, and he gets the best of Daredevil, which doesn't usually happen. So you kind of understand from the beginning that he is a badass. And then you find out his story, and you find out the reason why he's doing what he does. And immediately you're just like, I know I shouldn't like you. I know I shouldn't agree with the things that you do because you kill people, but I understand where you're coming from. And I think the Punisher story is interesting on a lot of different levels because he's an anti-hero, which is like a big thing right now. And so you never really feel comfortable supporting what he does, but you kind of know that in the end, he's a good guy. But where it steps it up to the next level is in Jon Bernthal's, his acting and how he throws himself into this character. And Mitch, you were talking about, you know, this graveyard scene and all the other moments with him where it's the tip of his head and the way that he moves and the way that he says things. It's so subtle. And you just, he just throws his complete being into this character. And for a lot of different reasons, I love him so much. Yeah. And I mean, I was talking about before, like, I like really violent things. And it's cool to watch him, you know, just destroy things, especially breaking when they're bad guys. Breaking
femurs left and right. He just snapped them like the two befores.
I love that he's so strong and that he's so dangerous, not because I have like a weird thing for bad guys or anything, but he's just a powerful person. And yet at the end of the day, like, he loved his family more than anything. And it breaks his heart that they're gone and that he has to live in a world where they don't exist anymore. And to see somebody like that, somebody that you know can shoot a person in the head without blinking an eye, be so invested in their family and love them so deeply and so truly, and then express that, is really beautiful to watch on screen. And I just, and he's got a storyline. His storyline is very much wrapped up with Karen's storyline in the show, and it's so beautiful. And I don't, like, it doesn't go anywhere, but the potential is there, and there's chemistry between them. I mean, not just like, you can read into it and say this romantic chemistry, but beside that, like, she cares about him and his story, and he wants to protect her because she, unlike a lot of the people around her, can't necessarily protect herself in the same way, although she does take care of business a couple of times, I'll tell you that. But this friendship, more than anything, I think I love that it's not necessarily romantic, but this friendship, these two people who are complete opposites develop, is so interesting and so cool to me. And the fact that he can still care about somebody after everything that he's been through and the person that he's turned into kind of gives you hope for humanity. And I know that's a lot to lay on this character's shoulders, but there are so many reasons why I love this storyline. It was the best part of Daredevil season 2, and I think they dropped the ball in a couple of places. I was expecting to love Elektra a lot more than I actually did, but Frank Castle, Punisher, I mean, they knocked it out of the park. And there's a reason why he's getting his own spinoff show. And I will watch that until the end of time.
That was a gut punch to remember that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So if anyone wants to watch this episode that I'm talking about, I guarantee you, you do not need to know the story at all, period. Jump in. That's fine. Don't even have to watch the episode itself. Just scroll into probably like the 35-minute mark or the 40-minute mark. It's a Penny and a Dime, so that's season 2, episode 4, production episode number 17. So, wow, and wow, and wow, you will feel it. You will probably. So the thing is I almost feel bad for emotionally spoiling it here, because I didn't expect this to happen. I mean, did you, Karen? Like, this whole plot was, like, about his PTSD and of yeah. not
well,
just
I mean, that's
not just
a
the
huge
war.
Part of the characters. So, like, I knew that was coming.
But still,
but again,
the
like,
level
you
of
can
emotion.
Care about the character, and it could be poorly executed. I mean, they've done Punisher movies before, and, like, I watched one of them, and it was fine. It was whatever, but it was an action movie. This, as much action as there is in it, has a huge emotional score to it. And I think that is John Bernthal, like, to a T. Like, it's just, it's him investing himself in this character. And if you didn't have that, it wouldn't hit the same notes in the same way.
Yeah, he's honestly, I find him to be emotion first, action way second. But that's not to say he's bad at action. It's just that the reason he performs so well in those action scenes is because he is so invested. As you're saying, he throws himself so heavily into his characters that you believe it. And you feel like every single time you're seeing him on screen as a new character, even in Wolf of Wall Street, when he played a minor role in that, I was still impressed. I was like, who is this guy? Like, how is he not just more of a thing? Like, more people need to be behind him. He is too impressive to have people not talking about him. I don't remember the last time, honestly, that I felt about an actor like this. I really don't. I don't know that there's also been the long form that Netflix is that does allow the non-commercial break and to have that long episode to have it all kind of, like, that episode felt like one giant act to me too, which really helped his performance there, because you're almost as exhausted as the actors and the characters, all of the above, right? And getting into this moment where he finally tells the story of his, when he discovered his family had died. So that was just like that emotional release and you being kind of exhausted watching all of that, but still being excited. You were like, oh, I needed that. Thank you. I didn't know I needed that, John, but I did. You gave it to me, and it's such a blessing. Yeah. Oh,
Natalie, have you watched any of the Netflix shows?
Yes, but not to that point. Not I watched them the first season, but not to this point.
You need to watch season two, and then you need to talk to me about it.
Just jump in and see the scene, Natalie, and see if it sells you.
I found them very long. Like, the episodes are very long, and I was very upset. So, I found them really, 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 really dense. But
they are. Although that's why I like them.
Yeah, you can really dig in. That's kind of
like, I mean, I'm not a not dense person, you know. I don't know. Like, you know, we're talking online, and we're going to write about the fact that we want this kind of thing for, you know, for comic heroes and stuff. Mm. So I'll try again.
And that will be an ongoing dialogue, I think, on the podcast.
Don't worry, I'm not Iron Fist, though.
Oh, I'm avoiding it.
I watched the premiere. I'm going to watch it, to be perfectly honest. I'm going to watch it all. I watched the premiere episode. Yeah. I hate Danny Rand so much.
Is he the actor?
Do you think you're meant to hate him?
I think he's a bit of a dick. Like,
yeah.
And the thing is, I don't think he realizes he is, but that almost makes it worse.
Mm.
Like, if you're going to be a dick, at least own up to it. But
yeah. So now I wonder, so what's the show where it's Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage.
Defenders.
Is it Defenders? And that's Iron Fist. I wonder how this plays in. I wonder if Punisher, that's his spinoff. Like, he starts there and then he goes off into his own. If that's the chronological order of it all. Because if so, that gives me more John Bernthal and I'm happy. But I almost don't want
him. I saw John Bernthal once, live and in the flesh.
What was he doing?
Where?
It was at, I believe it was at San Diego.
Yeah,
because he came on after the Teen Wolf panel, Natalie, you'd left.
Oh, they did.
I sat literally crying to myself
the Luke Cage and Jessica Jones?
He was around, and so he just came on stage, and he had
a
beard.
Like, hey, I'm here.
He had a beard, and let me tell you, that did things to me.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh my
wow,
God.
I can only imagine. Holy crap.
I'm going to find a picture for you, Mitch.
I need to see. I need to see. Him with a beard? That's...
So, Why is this coming up for you today, Mitch? Why today is the day of John Bernthal?
Okay, so today's the day of John Bernthal because this was the perfect storm for it all. I wanted to wait until we were well past Daredevil Season 2 being out so I could talk about that scene, so we could totally spoil the series. And I wanted to be on with Karen specifically because I knew of her love of Frank. So it all just kind of fell together. And once again, I always have a backlog and I'm always updating it. But I'm like, it's kind of like how, like, I know, Karen, you always say that you have, like, a big backlog of books. And you're like, I need to catch up and I just need to keep getting back on the ones that I promised myself I'd do later. This one was so important to me, so I needed to say it. And I'm hoping that it's you know, maybe it's timely enough that Iron Fist is coming out. We can be like, no, don't watch that. Watch Daredevil instead. So that's the most relevancy I can give it, but it needed to wait. I was definitely gonna hold on that one for spoiler reasons.
Okay. I might go next because I just want to say it quickly, and then Karen, you can finish us off with your new recommendation of whatever it is that you're doing.
I sent you a picture of John Bernthal.
He looks like Hugh Jackman a little bit, doesn't he?
He looks really different from on the television.
Yeah.
But, like, I really like his face, you guys.
The nose is, like, broken, but, like, a good broken.
Right? Like, apparently that's my kind of guy.
Broken nose. Yeah, Buffy.
What you were saying before then as well, like, just very quickly, is what we were saying just before we started, is that he, you know, you were saying that you were really, oh, apparently I like guys in emotional stress and stuff like that, which it's not that shocking to me. I think I feel like it's very common. And, because what you're talking about with, like, someone, you know, being very emotionally vulnerable, like, acting on their emotions, having, you know, integrity in their emotions, is honestly just something that we don't really see men do that much. And it's, you know, a big part of enjoying, I think, male characters in the media, especially for women, is, like, seeing a better version of men's emotional expression than actually tends to exist in real life. And whether that's, like, for good or bad or, like, you know, whatever. And I think it's a big part of why people really love the Winter Soldier in Marvel as well, like, why that turned a corner for so many people in terms of, like, emotional depth in the MCU.
Yeah.
And partly, you know, what Mitch said about him, his expression, Frank's being, like, typically a feminine trait. It's not specifically feminine, but the emotional, like, responses of these characters is something that, you know, isn't necessarily seen with men that often. And with the Winter Soldier specifically, it's even that his lack of agency and the fact that he's, like, being used as a tool by, like, an organization and all of that kind of stuff, and that he's struggling to regain agency is a very, 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 very female plot. Is a very, 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 very sort of poignant thing. I think there's a reason that a lot of young women have not just, like, oh my god, he's so cute, that have, like, are emotionally ruined and empathetic about the Winter Soldier is because of that that kind of emotional arc that is really not typically masculine. So. Or not typically, like, performative masculinity. Like, it's a very atypical story for a you know, big, brutal male character. And I think that's why it's appealing. But yeah.
Like, you're breaking femurs and hearts. Come on. What could get you better than that?
Oh. Yeah. Okay. So my hype was kind of a little flip to my gripe in about friendships and stuff like that. So my hype is basically the concept of sort of unexpectedly making friends, making new friends that you kind of get to go more than small talk with. And I actually had this two times recently. One was kind of a direct shoot off of the drama that I mentioned. And it's not the new friend that I mentioned either. In this whole supernatural experience for me, I've actually started talking daily, especially since losing my other friend. I've started talking daily with a girl who I've actually known on the internet for, like, 12 years or something from LiveJournal days. And we always knew each other. We always knew each other's stories. We trusted each other. Like, you know, we were in each other's, like, friends locked groups on LiveJournal. But we just weren't, like, one-on-one friends where we talk, you know, like, every day and stuff like that. But I've known her for so long, and she's from Australia as well. And so I absolutely know that, you know, she knows, you know, everything I've put out publicly about my life and hers and stuff. We've been mutuals for a really, really long time. We have started talking very regularly because Supernatural is her big current fandom as well. So that's actually been really, really awesome because I have complete trust in her, and she's like not a new wild card or anything like that. So the improvement of my relationship with her is actually really amazing, and a really, really good thing that's come out of it. And I was very vaguely talking to her about, like, when I was talking about Supernatural, for example, when I was still talking with my friend, I'd put a couple of comments on, like, my locked Twitter, not on my public one. And Kate, my actual friend, my long-term friend, is on my locked Twitter, of course. And so we started sort of engaging a little bit there. So that's been really amazing outcome. That's kind of, like, awesome. You know, I do have some good, awesome online friends as well. But I also, in the last very short amount of time, have, like, weirdly made friends with a couple of people I work with. And I've worked where I work for over a year, but it's only sort of just pushed past into this kind of, like, dropping the small talk situation. Like, one of my close workmates, basically, she's very social, and she's, like, the nicest person I've ever met in real life, like, not in a facetious way. She's just so nice. I take offense
to that. You've said that Why? To me before.
You're also the nicest person I've met in real life.
Can't have both, Natalie.
Well, fine. She's the nicest person I've met in Australia. How about that? But she's adaptable. Like, she gets on with everyone. She's really just so good. She's like a secret nerd who had, like, friends who, like, made fun of her for being a nerd and stuff like that. Like, she did. And anyway, I know that she's been wanting to sort of add me on Facebook and stuff, and pretty recently she did, and I was like, I can't believe it took you a year to crack. And she was like, there was so many times when I was so close. And now, and then there's another girl who works with us who's very private, but who I vibed immediately as soon as she started working in our office instead of in the office downstairs. I'm like, oh, you're like me. Like, you're very intense about your fandoms. You're very, like, I can tell it. It's just you know how to rein it in better than I do. But you are a hardcore person in my kind of don't know how to engage unless it's, like, big talk. But you are just choosing to keep that side of you very private. We now have a private Facebook chat where we do not keep that private, and basically have just become very, very good friends at work, which is really unexpected for me because I kind of vibed it, but I wasn't sure how it was going to go. And I really don't make friends well in real life, and, like, I'm very, very good at, like, being a friend and having stuff like that. If you sort of skip the small talk and everyone's on the same level of intensity about, like, talking about the things they like or social issues or fandom or whatever, but I'm very, very bad at, like, not knowing what level everyone's at. And so I kind of wasn't sure how it was going to go, but yeah, so unexpectedly, we are now friends, and this sort of came up because she has taped to her desk she basically manages the student run clubs and societies at the university, so she's like the staff member who, like, helps the students to do that. And she has taped up the contract for the Buffy Society, which is now a defunct society at Sydney University, but there used to be, like, a Buffy the Vampire Appreciation Club, and she basically has their constitution taped up because she thought their, like, aims and objectives were so cute. And then we sort of started talking about that, and then she liked Angel better than Buffy, and then she was like, we should make an Angel is better than Buffy club, and she wrote a joke contract for it and sent it to us, and it became this thing, and now we are quite chatty privately, and it's sort of getting the secrets are coming out about the nerdiness and stuff like that, and it's good and very unexpected, so yeah, perhaps I'll ditch you all because I'll have some real friends in real life and actually just hang out with people in real life and not have to come on a podcast.
I literally said people go like...
only socialization on my podcast.
People go like, what are I'm you joking. Doing on your St. Patrick's Day? And I'm like, I'm podcasting all night and I'm really excited about it. And they're like, really? And I'm like, I mean, these are my friends. This is my life. Yeah. This is what I do.
No, I'm joking. You guys, they will not replace you guys. But I don't actually have any friends in real life in Sydney. So it should be interesting.
Does Leo not count as a friend?
Yeah, but like, she's like also like both like also half of my brain and yeah. kind of like furniture. Like I can be alone with Leo there. Like, no. It's like if you've lived with someone, you would understand what I mean. Like it's insular. It's not the same as like, oh, I have, and she has fucking fuck tons of friends in Sydney as well. Like she's got tons of friends. I have none.
But they're so, not your friends. Yeah. Did you?
So no, they're not my friends.
You never steal friends from a significant. I sometimes do that by accident. I steal friends from significant others, and they like me better than the guy I'm dating. And mm-hmm. then they're like,
we have like two or three. We're actually going to a birthday party on Sunday of. You guys know Bob Ross, the painter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like the internet, like not internet, but like you know he paints the weird landscape tutorials. Yeah, my friend is having a paint-along Bob Ross birthday party. We paint a painting to the video. But that's, like, quite a rare occasion. We have, like, a couple of mutual friends, but they're not, like, super, super close. Oh, it kind of ebbs and flows. It's only about three people, though. But she has a lot of friends. She's made friends in a couple of workplaces and from university that have been very much real life friends. Like, hey, we all go and watch movies together.
I hope to see your picture. I hope to see what you paint.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's going to not be very good. You do painting, don't you, Mitch, sometimes?
Oh, hey, look at you remembering. Yeah.
You had a painting period. Did you not?
Well, it wasn't like I did and I didn't, because it's kind of like, you know, those paint and sip things. And I was like, oh my God, I'm actually kind of good at this, but I just want to do it at home. Mm-hmm. So now I do that when I'm hanging out with friends in New York. I fly there specifically to paint with them sometimes. And aww. It's actually fabulous. And the last time I painted this Little Mermaid Playbill photo for my mother, and she was very happy to have that. She was amazed. She goes, she literally said, I didn't know you were creative. And I had to stop her there.
Ooh, that's a sentence, isn't it?
And I was like, okay, all right. Oh, well, that's what you think, then. Those formative years of Glee Chat, that torture, that pain was for nothing.
That's okay. My father is a professional artist and is always unbelievably shocked when I do anything at all, like in a kind of like he's really pleased, but in also a way that's like, wow, you okay. Especially when I cook or bake, he's like, because I think that's also because my eating is so difficult, like that, yeah. I have so many problems with eating that he's always shocked that I can cook things that are not necessarily things for me to eat, like things for other people to eat. And he's like, how do you do it without tasting it? Like, how? And I'm like, it's science. Like, it's not. And because for him, cooking is an art. Yeah. For me, it's a science.
For your dog, and, right?
And, but I also made like these like painted like ceramics for him for Christmas. Like, basically, like just like, you know, tessellated shaped ceramic things, because we went to this painting class with work. Mm-hmm. And he was just like so shocked and amazed. Like, I can't believe this is just. I didn't know you could do it. I'm like, yeah, okay, calm down. Like, all right, yes, let's tell everyone that I am the only person in this family who's not got any visual artistic talent. All three of my brothers can draw, and a couple of them are actually professional designers. And, yeah, so I feel you on that, Mitch, basically.
Right? It's not like I'm amazing. No, it's just, it's the fact that my mother was amazed that I had a semblance of talent in anything creatively. But I was just like, that's a pretty blanket statement to make, Mom. Thanks.
I have the opposite problem because I'm a writer, which like everybody in my life knows, and I have a degree in art history, so people automatically assume that I can draw and paint. No.
I never did. No, I've always known. So the thing to me is, it's Hermione can't draw. I mean... That's it.
Oh my god.
I guess
thank
so.
You.
No, it's a compliment. No, it's because I find you to be pleasantly bookish, Karen, and I have to tell you that. And as high of a compliment as it doesn't sound, it really is for me, because I actually envy your ability to sit and read as much as you do, and to write as much as you do, and to edit as much as you do, because I don't have the patience. I can, but I lose it. You seem to have, like, a really high threshold to get through all of that, and I lose it at a certain point where I'm just like, okay, time to turn my mind off and go play some fucking Smash Bros. For the next 5 hours. Like, but you seem to have a drive that can really get you through it all, so good on you.
Thank you. Is it my turn yet?
It can be your turn. So yes, it's nice to have friends. So I had a shitty friend. Now I have some nice friends, but the shitty friend was still shitty. But it's also nice to have nice friends. It's your turn.
Yes. I want to talk about some more violent things. I'm dancing in my chair, if you couldn't tell.
I can hear it.
So, there is a movie coming out that I did not know existed until I saw the trailer. Mm. It is called Atomic Blonde, and it stars Charlize Theron. And she is... Okay, so... It is based on a graphic novel called The Coldest City by Anthony Johnston. And she's basically a spy who says here, it revolves around a spy who has to find a list of double agents who are being smuggled into the West. And she's the star. She's the Atomic Blonde. James McAvoy's in it.
Okay.
John Goodman is in it.
Okay.
Weird.
Sofia Boutella is in it.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I really like her.
Well, she makes out with Charlize Theron. Well, she does.
Oh, okay,
that.
All right.
Okay, so my question there, Karen, is this finally the bisexual superhero that I've been wanting?
I mean, I don't know, but they do some pretty almost explicit things in that trailer. It's a Red Band trailer, so there's some stuff going down. And it's funny because a couple of my friends, I was like, all right, I'm into this because I love seeing women kick ass, and there's a whole thing I want to talk about related to that. A couple of my other friends, you guys know them.
Yeah.
They are lesbians, and I'm like, okay, okay, two girls making out in this trailer, you need to watch this. Another friend of mine loves James McAvoy, like, he's straight, but he's like, would turn gay for James McAvoy. Said, okay, you need to watch this too because he's in this movie. And it just weirdly fit like all the categories, all the requirements for my friend group, this small friend group. I was like, this movie is going to be amazing. Like, I've already decided it's going to be so cool. It's directed by John Leitch. I don't know if that's how you say his name, but he co-directed John Wick, which
is
kind of a big deal. I mean, that's been making waves. He's also going to direct Deadpool too.
John Wick is a hugely big deal because it's like, it's kind of,
It can't.
What's wrong with Keanu Reeves? He's
amazing. Like the Nicolas Cage of the Nicolas Cages, isn't he?
No, he's not. Keanu Reeves is an amazing human being.
Well, I know he is, but isn't he just like, he's the Matrix and then he's done. Like, I thought he just didn't recover.
No, Mitch, no. I can't, I will fight you about Keanu Reeves, but no. John Wick is really a big deal. Like, it's like a low-key, very high-quality movie. Like, people didn't expect it to be, like, a big deal. And it's not, like, big deal, like, oh, box office, etc. But it is very acclaimed because, people really...
I feel like you're jumping me down another one of these Loki rabbit holes that I'll never come back from. Oh, God.
It's really... You should look at...
Chapter 2 just came out this year, and people were like... I mean, as a sequel, people are still freaking out about it, so...
What is even that... I turned it off because it was Keanu Reeves, and I understood him to be... very unpleasant A-lister who's a very happy person.
Keanu.
Nice to be around, but the actor himself doesn't do well anymore is what I thought. I thought he didn't perform on the box office because he was an actor that people didn't think did well critically anymore. Am I missing the boat here?
I don't know. Keanu is just Keanu. He's really lovely person. Basically, John Wick is basically about a man who gets... a dog because his wife dies, and then some gangsters kill his dog, and then the movie is about him getting revenge because the dog is dead.
Oh my god.
And
I love
it
that.
It sounds both ridiculous and adorable, but it's like a really big deal. It's a very important movie. David Leitch is one of the people that he actually second unit directed Civil War. Brooke has told me about this because you know how Brooke is about the Russo brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the Russos know David Leitch, and he was willing to so he second unit directed Civil War with the Russos because they wanted to work together, basically. Even though he's a director in his own credit, he took like a lower job to work with the Russos and do stuff like that.
I remember you saying that, yeah.
And yeah, he is. So I'm interested if he's the director of Atomic Blonde. I'm very interested.
Yes. Okay. So, I mean, that aside, like, that made me excited just because I knew what John Wick had been doing and how people were reacting to that. Haven't seen the movie yet, but, like, clearly is right up my alley. So I need to watch that. But also the fact that he got pulled on to Deadpool 2, like, I have a lot of confidence then that this is going to be a great movie, and it's the first solo credit as a director. Like, he co-directed John Wick, so
yeah.
This is going to be him and him alone, which is really exciting. But I don't like rom-coms. I like action movies. Mm-hmm. I like violence and explosions and people punching each other. I always have. And yes. Particularly... Yes. 1,000 times, yes. You will never make me feel bad about it.
Okay.
But that aside, like, I really love female-led action movies, and there aren't a lot out there. I mean, you're talking like Tomb Raider, okay, The Fifth Element, Ultraviolet. There's some others, but not a whole lot of them. There aren't a lot of female action stars where you can say, okay, you know, Sylvester Stallone, action star, or Jason Statham, action star. Like, they kind of do these things over and over again, and you can count on them for putting out an action movie and it being a typical action movie. I mean, it's a blockbuster, which is fine. It's its purpose. But there aren't a lot of females who do this sort of thing all the time. And I think Charlize Theron has come and gone. She can do a lot of other things, as can male action heroes. I'm not saying they can't. But you don't necessarily peg women as you are an action star and you will consistently put out action movies. And, like, we need more of them. So as I saw this trailer, I just flipped out because it is bloody, it is violent, and she doesn't give a shit what you think about her. And she is this badass woman that I think has a very masculine sort of role, like your typical masculine action star.
That's
who she is in this trailer. Right, exactly. And it's just so refreshing, and I'm so excited.
Would you say that she's what Angelina Jolie couldn't be? Because Angelina Jolie didn't. She tried, and then she stopped, in a way.
I love Angelina Jolie for her action roles. I love Tomb Raider and I love Salt. And I think that she very well could have done that sort of thing. And I mean, I think she's a great actor otherwise. And she's very good at doing dramas as well. But yeah, I mean, she really could have gone there with that and hasn't necessarily done that. And I mean, I think it's great that she does multiple things, that she's capable of being an action star and putting on dramatic performances. But yeah, I mean, potentially Charlize could become that. I would be sad if she limited herself to that, but I just want more badass females leading box offices. And, you know, we've got Wonder Woman coming up. We've got Captain Marvel coming up. Like, those are superhero movies. So similar, but very specific niche. I like seeing just action stars, and I like seeing, you know, agents who will just kill bad guys.
And did you see that Charlize Theron is also this Power Rangers reboot villain? She's like a very ugly green witch woman, and it looks really great. Honestly,
are
like
you
she's
sure
a,
that's her.
It is. I just looked it up.
No,
wait. Is that Elizabeth Banks? Why am I...
Yes, it's Elizabeth Banks.
Doesn't she just look like Charlize Theron in that, though? Thank you for catching that. Maybe I'm just seeing things. You can't tell through all that makeup anyways. That's Elizabeth Banks. Oh my God, that's Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah. Don't worry. It's okay.
No, yeah, okay. So what I wanted to say here is that also I really appreciated the trailer for the lesbianic kiss because I was like, yes, more of this. Because it was so normalized and sexy in a way that was just like, mm-hmm. I was meant to.
And it wasn't just a kiss, I will tell you that much.
I mean, a lot of kisses going to a lot of places. She did that thing where it's like a, I guess that trope of, I was supposed to spy on them, so I did. And I liked that. I was like, okay, I'm kind of like, I'm like thinking this, the subversion here. And that that honestly is what caught my interest the most, because I was like, I think I really needed this and I didn't know it. So, and it wasn't even from you. I think I heard you reference it. And Natalie, it was a Twitter ad. Okay.
I've seen a few things in the last week or two, like making noise about it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. it looks like honestly, this might be a movie that I'm almost opening weekend for, and that's rare. So that's a pretty big thing for me.
I mean, if Kristen allows it, midnight for me, like,
do they do midnight screenings for every movie? Oh, like, will they have
almost? Natalie, it's the go big or go home, honestly.
yeah, they don't really.
This does come out July 28th, 2017, so got a couple of months, but
I wonder if they'll do something at San Diego Comic-Con for it, Karen.
That'd be fun.
Why did you mention that?
You're going to do press for this movie at Comic-Con?
Oh my God.
And I bet they will. Which studio is it? Is it independent or is it?
It's Focus Features.
So who are they under? Because they don't do Universal. They might. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe this would be something at Comic-Con. You never know.
Well, that'd be
interesting. Kingsman, like, for example, Kingsman did a Comic-Con panel, and this is making me think of Kingsman.
Oh, Natalie, we could have some thoughts on Kingsman, couldn't we? Charlize, she seems ageless to me because she just was referenced on Buffy, okay? That's weird.
Yes. What? Was she?
Yeah. Harmony goes, no threesomes with girls unless one of the women is Charlize Theron and then the rest are me and you, Spike. So I was like, whoa, Charlize Theron back then? Really?
Yeah, that's kind of weird, I guess.
Because she's still so relevant now. It's just like, mm-hmm. when and where did you come out of anything? Yeah. I don't get it. It seems
and of
like
course,
you've always been here.
Mad Max, I mean, that made huge waves too.
I forgot.
So.
She does have some action in her right there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a big deal. Oh my God, yes, that was a big deal. Okay, cool. Well, I'm happy we're able to get through our gripes and our hypes. Now it's time for me to do my two truths and a lie. Who's ready? I have some great ones. They all sound like lies, like extreme lies. So definitely this set's going to be fun. All right, so starting off then, guys, the first truth and or lie is I once ate chips that I found in an open bag on a table in the Universal Park. Number one. Number two. I once flew across the country to go on a date with a guy at a Denny's. And number three, I once drove for 14 hours straight in a single stretch from Denver to California. Find the lie.
Oh, God, I hope the last one's a lie. It sounds very scary.
Which sounds scariest, though, honestly.
I mean, they all sound pretty terrifying.
That was the thing.
I want to say it's the last one.
Okay.
I feel like the chips I have done, not that exactly, but I feel like I have noticed food being freshly left by people and being very close to picking it up or potentially once I have picked it up. Like, as in, like, they've left it and I'm like, you've just left so much fucking food there and I'm really upset about it. I don't know.
If I had to be lying about one thing.
Maybe your date was not at Denny's. I don't know if you should fly across the country for a date at Denny's.
Wouldn't I though?
No.
So final answer is that Karen's driving 14, Natalie is flying to Denny's.
Yeah, and I think so.
Natalie, you are correct. I did not fly across the country to go on a date with the guy to Denny's. I made that up completely. Never once flew across the country for any given person for any given date. That would be.
I'm really sorry that I
Karen.
That was
I know.
True. I'm really sorry, Mitch.
I mean, there are some stories that are definitely off-air things that will happen that were somewhat related to that. This did come off of something else with someone we all know that was something kind of related to that lie. So I will absolutely... That's such a tease for listeners. That's horrible. Regardless, it did come out of somewhere. So that's kind of sad. So I did. I once was sitting just on that Epcot trip that I just took, you know, for Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
I was at Universal, and I was sitting near like that spitting fountain that talks to you, right near the Harry Potter Universal Park, like the castle. So I'm just kind of chilling, and I just sit down at this table, and I look down, and right there's an open bag of Sun Chips, nearly full. Could have been a cockroach inside of there. I didn't mind. I was hungry. I just picked them on up and started chowing down. My friend goes to me, she goes like, she goes, you know, that's not sane, right? I'm like, but they're so good.
I tell you what I have done with that. I used to work in a movie cinema.
Yeah.
And we used to eat everything left behind. Like, people would open, you know, a bag of M&Ms and only eat half of them and leave them in the seat. When we would clean the cinemas, God, we would eat all of the leftover candy and stuff like that. That was really common. So,
all yeah, right. Well, I feel like that one's not so horrible, but driving 14 hours straight in a single stretch from Denver to California, I'm not an energy drink kind of guy. That was the first and only time that I've taken an energy drink. And oh my God. So I finally get into like the Los Angeles area because I'm going to Orange County. And there was nothing I could do to keep myself awake other than blast Taylor Swift's Welcome to New York repeatedly and shout it. My windows all open, the wind's blaring me in the face, and I'm just, Welcome to New York. And I am so miserable in my life decision at this point to then drive all the way from Denver to Orange County in one day. Don't do it. It's not a good idea. Barely survived. So that's it. Those are my truths and my lies. Now I do want to get into our question of the day. So I do want anyone that listens to always participate in this. I personally love the questions of the day. You can do this just by tweeting at us, or Twitter is a fun way, but you can also anon us if you want on Tumblr to make it more saucy. So I haven't read this one. I'm going to see what this one says. So there's two. This one is our first question, and then we'll move on to like a general feedback.
Yeah.
So the first one is from slightly arty nonsense on Tumblr, who said, "What do you think is the next big step in improving LGBT representation in fiction? Haven't we just found that? Just that action hero, like Charlize Theron."
Oh. I mean,
normalizing it.
Yeah.
So much is, yeah, it's normalizing it. And it's really difficult to do. This is something I feel really strongly about, because you guys remember my Poe Dameron article?
Oh, yes. How could I forget?
Yeah. So this is something I talked about a lot in that, because just in case you have not read this article, I believe that Poe Dameron is intended to be a queer character. And I vibed it very, very, very quickly from the performance in the movie for some reason, and then came out of it and found that other people were kind of saying the same thing, and ended up writing this gigantic emotional think piece about it. The problem with that, with a movie like, with Star Wars or something like that, is that people will get up and they'll say, hey, it's not that I'm homophobic, it's just that it's not part of the story, so why would it be included? Like, and the issue with queerness is you have to take the extra step to verbalize it, to show the representation. For example, The Force Awakens is diverse, you know, like John Boyega is black and Oscar Isaac is Hispanic. And obviously Daisy Ridley is a woman. And there are people in that movie who are, you know, older and different races and all sorts of genders, ages, races, ethnicities, and you see them, you can see them with your eyes on screen doing a job, a medic or a soldier or whatever it is, you know, that's all fine. That is normalized representation. That is normalized, hey, this isn't about the fact that that person is a certain race. This is Star Wars. They don't have the same races. It doesn't mean the same thing anyway. You know, it's just normalized inclusion of a diverse, body of actors. For queer representation, you need to take the step further to verbalize it, because you can't tell just by looking at someone. And that's where the problem comes in with normalization, because you have to take a second out of the story, which might not be about their sexuality at all, literally at all, You have to take the second to show in some way that they are queer. Star Trek did it with Sulu very well.
Yeah, I was just
so there's an example that worked.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Oh, I was so happy. Yeah.
But there's an example that worked, but it's really difficult. It shouldn't be difficult, but it seems to be like the last stepping stone for people to take about, you know, diversity, that they, you know, that because it's not just, oh, this person could be cast as any ethnicity and it not affect the character. It's, if this person is queer, we have to actually script it, if you know what I mean, as opposed to just seeing them. And so that's something that Hollywood, to me, needs to get past doing. Like, they need to actually find a way to do that without it being a big deal. Or if they do want to make it about that story, that's totally fine, like, you know, as well. But if people are going to, like, put up their hands and complain about, you know, oh, the Avengers or Star Wars or whatever, it's not about...
Let's get into Beauty and the Beast.
Characters being queer.
I do want to point out, too, that, like, purposely making a story about somebody's sexuality. Like, I just saw Moonlight, which was an absolutely phenomenal movie. And, like, that movie is about the main character's sexuality. But, and, like, making those kind of movies, or even the way that Glee did those issue episodes where, like, this is specifically about this person's issue, that's a good thing. And I think that we still need it.
They need to go hand in hand. They absolutely need to go hand in hand.
They have to go hand in hand, because I still think we need those issue episodes or those issue movies, because people today still struggle with those things. They struggle with coming out. They struggle with people accepting them. So it's nice to have something to relate to. But in terms of the next big step, and in terms of making this more widespread, I think just normalizing it, and, like, you don't like the way that they did Sulu, like, it has nothing to do with his character, has nothing to do with his job on the team, and it's just the fact that it's there to begin with, and somebody could be like, I can relate to him. I know, like, I have a husband too, and that makes it something that attaches them to the character, where it doesn't have to be this huge thing. It's just normal, like it is in real life.
So yeah, honestly, a lot of the reason that I wanted to go see Star Trek, and this is a lot of the reason that this is wrong, is that there was a gay character in it. And I was like, okay, that's nice and relatable, and it's not a big deal, so I like that. And I think that that should show just how starved LGBT people are for that kind of media, where it's just a normal thing. And I shouldn't be going to see a movie for a minor moment. Like, that shouldn't have to be a thing anymore. And that's where I do appreciate, for instance, as I was saying, like, in The Walking Dead, how there's someone that's turning out to be, like, the secondhand man to Rick is gay, and it's very normalized, extremely normalized. And that is the most popular television on cable. I couldn't be any more ecstatic about that relationship, about that idea, the straight and a gay character getting along like they do and not being a thing. It's just there. It's very Teen Wolf, and it does remind me of a lot of what they've done in terms of their gay isn't a thing, it just is idea. And I do appreciate that, but where I do think there need to be you know, even further steps just from having, you know, gay or lesbian represented are, Natalie, I know you and I usually are on this Santana and Styles boat. Like, if it's bisexual, make it happen.
Yeah.
It's done. Don't backtrack on it. Keep it. We need to have that normalized, too, because you can't just pretend. I mean, once again, Riverdale, right? Is that the show? I think it is.
Yeah, and I,
with the asexual character, that it's like, let's just keep it then. Don't make it. So that's where I'm saying it's not even just gay, as this question does say, LGBT representation in general. That includes a lot of just different walks, and they just need to happen. They don't need to be explained. They don't need to be, we're boycotting LeFou because the director said he wants to rip pages out of the Bible now because of the gays or something, whatever. Just stupid. I don't care. We don't need the drama about it. Just make it normal. That's it. That's what we want.
Yeah, I think that the stories, you know, about, hey, I'm discovering this about myself and explaining what it is, are, you know, still a thing that people need in, you know, to see or, you know, to understand or whatever. But it can also go hand in hand with stories where, you know, it's not actually about that. Like, that there are characters who are you know, there are stories about the experience of being queer, and then there are stories that queer people just happen to be in because queer people just happen to be in the world, you know, like. And I think that we've done okay at the first part. We've done okay at having shows and TV, movies and TV shows about that whole, hey, this is a story about the experience, though there are still some, you know, some people, some different minorities missing from that, both queer, you know, not just the queer community, but all sorts of minorities or all
you're
sorts
kind
of movies
into, like,
about
Will and Grace, right? Ones.
Well,
like that idea.
I don't know. No, I more mean like Moonlight and stuff, like stories that are actually about, like, hey, this is the discovery of, like,
sexuality and
someone being queer, or like this is the discovery about, like, what it's like being queer in that specific community or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's all well and good. And I think we're doing okay at that. I think we're doing okay at, hey, these are queer stories for queer people and they're really well done, beautiful and stuff like that. I think we're okay there. But we're not okay is, like, stories that are incidental, but no one in it is queer, if you know what I mean. That it's, hey, this is just a story about whatever, and that no one in it is incidentally queer.
Yes.
Like, that normalized thing. That's where it's falling behind. And when this person is asking next step, that's the next step, I think, is that's the next big step. I would also really like that to be improving representation. I think that both the trans experience and the bisexual experience are obviously really lacking from that LGBT label in terms of media, especially where it's normalized, but even just the first part of that, even just the story actually about the experience is also lacking. Obviously there are a few things out there, but that's still, you know, pretty small chunk of the pie chart compared to, you know, everything else. And I don't know, I feel like, and I also feel like being, I don't know, maybe my perception's really skewed, but I feel like I know many more bisexual people than monosexual. By monosexual, that's either gay or straight, you know, like that they are one, you know, one way or the other. I feel like most of the people I know are bisexual. Maybe that's just because I flock towards them. But I feel like the ratio between my awareness of real bisexual people and the awareness of real bisexual people in the media is really not the same. And so, yeah.
Can I just say that I think that this is really dumb, but one of the most normalized experiences that I've seen on TV of bisexuality, and it's just there, is maybe or maybe not A Shot at Love with Teal Tequila, because it's a bisexual dating show, and that really excited me as a kid. I was like,
"Is that, and so is that like men and women can come on and try correct. And get Teal Tequila?"
Yes.
Well, what
hearing you say that sentence really
we,
correct,
well,
yeah.
we hate reality show. Like, I don't watch any of that, but we were talking about, like, the concept of a bisexual bachelor, so where everyone every person is bi, as in not all straight people, as in the bachelor or the bachelorette is bisexual, and every man or woman who's on the show is also bisexual, so real wild cards with who gets together, if you know what I mean.
Oh, you're blowing my mind here. That's like Teal Tequila on another level. Oof.
Yeah. Anyway.
I don't know if we needed Teal Tequila on another level, but we got
it. This is a big question. There's so much, you know, to say about it, but I think that if we're literally talking big next step in one word, it's normalization. It's stories where people just happen, you manage to slip in that someone who's part of the story is queer, and, you know, whether they have a romance or not, that's treated the same as any other, or whether it's not even part of the story at all, except for the fact that in the background, that person is queer. So
we do appreciate your feedback there, slightly arty nonsense, because we are full of slightly arty nonsense here, as you've learned. And going into some other things you've learned, this comes in and then in our general feedback section. This is from Tumblr Anon, our favorite. Here we go. Hope you come up, Tumblr Anon, because this is kind of fun. This is someone is saying, "You guys, what the shit is going on with this 3-hour podcast? I'm lucky to find 2 hours to listen to the thing. Now I need 3. This is like a really dumb gripe because I'm whining about the amount of content I'm getting, but seriously, it's too long."
Look.
Oops.
I have a very... This is obviously our last episode, the episode 13, which was around 3 hours long.
Yeah.
We know that that's not ideal for a podcast. We're very aware of that. And one of the reasons that we're only three people today is to hope to keep that a bit shorter, though it has already gone 2 hours, so Mitch, you might have to really clean that up and try and get it down. That being said, this is a personal show that we don't really have that many constraints on. I wouldn't ever really want to go over 3 hours, but we've done three-hour episodes on some of our other shows before.
Yeah.
It's a social event for us. It's us hanging out and talking, you know, to our friends, and then you guys can listen in or you cannot. It's okay.
Like, this is literally us clucking witch hens, getting together and clucking. If you don't like the clucking, go find somewhere else to be. Holy crap.
Rewatchable in joke.
Oh, God. Yeah. So it is personal, and it's like we're talking because that's how much we want to talk. Like, we don't really have the structure of, like, hey, we're trying to hit a goal, if you know what I mean. This is, a little difficult to predict. For example, today's quite long. Other times it's been more like 90 minutes. It's, I don't know, it's very difficult. It's a point of whether we want to cut something off. Like, my story today was quite long and weird, and then I don't know, it just seems to happen. I did run a poll on Twitter asking you know, are you mad at us for having the, because some people love it, some people are like, oh, just seeing the length on the podcast, I'm really excited to sit down and get into this. Some people love extra long episodes, and I ran a poll, and Twitter polls are like 24 hours, so in 24 hours it got like 40 votes, which is not that much, but it's fine. And 13% said yes, they're mad at us, keep it under 2 hours. 34%, so 13 said keep it under 2 hours, I'm mad at you. 34 said no, long is a treat. And 53% said do what you want.
Aww.
I think we'll continue to do what we want. I understand that it's an issue, but if that, like, really pisses you off, I don't know what to tell you. Like, it's quite a personal show. It's not a show that we have a lot of pressure or structure on. That was the intention of it. You don't have to listen to every episode. If you want, like, no one is forcing you. You're not paying for it.
You're not even advertised for it. Like, this literally is just, like, a free conversation, because I think maybe it's just, like, we needed an excuse to get together to talk and to feel like we're doing something. So we're like, okay, this is what we're going to do, and people can listen to it if they want. We'll kind of sort of produce it, but, like, we'll keep it normal.
Yeah, we'll do what we want, and you can also do what you want, and whether that means listening or not, that's fine. However, we are aware that 3 hours is long for us to produce, and it's long for anyone to commit to listening to if they don't really want to. But, you know, I don't want this to feel like a drag on you, you know, that you this is some sort of, like, commitment that you have to power through.
This is the same conversation as not. Instagram, isn't it? It's they quit us because they can't get through it all anymore and they want to be in it or not, you know? And I get that too. But I mean, so one podcast I wanted to bring up that does worse and always will than us in terms of length, if that's bad, is Gilmore Guys. They, I listened to the entirety of a 5.5 hour long episode once. So 5 hours and 30 minutes.
Five and a half hours.
Of the series finale now of the last episode in that Gilmore Girls revival. And I did it and I loved it. So you have to find your niche, guys. If that many people can listen to Gilmore Guys, I mean, that thing, like, revolutionized podcast overall, all over again, right?
That's nuts, though. 5.5 hours.
It is, but it isn't, because...
Please, we're not that far from there. We're not,
and that's the thing. Like, the thing is they don't cut their tangents at all. They sing songs in the middle of the... And I'm kind of that same mindset, so that's why I love it so much. But I don't do it on purpose, because I know, like, we're already at 3. We would be 5.5 hours long.
I did watch... I once watched one... Anyone out there watched the... along with me, the One Direction live stream on their album release day for the Midnight Memories album. So that was quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
And that was like 7 or 8 hours. Like, they live streamed all day from a studio in LA and, like, had different segments. And that was a very strange experience. In regards to the Twitter poll, like, a couple of people responded with comments as well. Like, someone, NerdyGeek77, said, I personally enjoyed it and I don't mind long episodes. Nurse Brack said, it actually took me all day to listen to because I kept having to stop to do other things, but I didn't mind. I'd rather you just let the conversation unfold naturally and not worry about keeping to a timetable. So that is a nice thing to say. Obviously, people might not want to criticize us on Twitter with their own names, hence this coming in and on. But I appreciate that 3 hours is very long. We have aimed to be shorter than that. However, apparently it still hasn't happened. I would like to get it to under 2 hours naturally.
Oh, wow.
But that means that usually basically means that we're not really talking to each other, that we're just telling each other our hypes and gripes and not conversing about them. So it's really up to you about what you – not really up to you. It's really up to how the show plays out. But if that many people are tuning out because of length, then I don't know. I mean, do feel free – if you want to feel free to say how you feel like the show should be, you can either say so on Tumblr or email or Twitter. That's fine, but it is a personal show. It's kind of like a personal blog in podcast form, so it's going to be pretty changing. So, yeah.
And then we do have feedback as well.
Yeah, we got an email, and this was about our last episode. So
Madeline, you seem really eager about this, and I know why, so go into it.
Well, I replied to him already, just saying that I would read it out. So we got an email from Kyle Newman. And it said, "Hey guys, I love listening to you guys' podcast. Thank you for doing what you do. I was recently listening to episode 13 of Not About the Weather, and you guys were talking about friendships in pop culture and TV shows that you guys really liked. That was our question of the day on episode 13. And I was really surprised to have heard that you did not once mention Scott and Stiles from Teen Wolf, especially for Natalie, because of the other podcast that is hubbed to this one. Lol, please don't get me wrong. I'm in no way trying to bash you or say how dare you forget or anything like that. I just thought it would have been one of the first you mentioned. I feel that Scott and Stiles have one of the most genuine friendships on current television, and I'm really sad that a good part of my life is going to be ending. Sorry for any grammar mistakes, and I love everyone on you guys' team. Keep up the good work." And that's from Kyle Newman. And he said, you can read this on the podcast if you like. So if you ever write to us and it's something you want to talk to us about personally and you don't want us to read it on air, maybe just say don't read this on air, because usually we would take a comment like this as fair game to read on air.
You guys are so knee deep into this. Do you want somewhat of an outsider perspective, or do you want to jump like diving into it?
I don't want to go on about it for ages, but I know I didn't mention them because I have never quite loved this friendship as much as some people do. Really? I kind of do now, but it's not one of the ones I automatically think of, because while I love Teen Wolf and I love Scott and Stiles, the characters, the way that the show is hinged on their friendship, while it has worked and I've loved the show, it just never sat with me the way that it sits with some people. And I've never been able to work out why. And I really liked what they did in the last season that we just covered of Stiles, especially when Stiles returned to Beacon Hills after being forgotten. But as Karen knows, Stiles and Scott is just never quite like on paper. I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. It's fine. I get it. This is what the show is, but it's just never got into my heart as a relationship for some reason. And it's weird. I don't know why, but it's weird. But if Karen had been on the episode, I'm sure she would have mentioned it.
I might have. Yeah. I'm trying to rack my brain for like what I would have ended up coming up with, and I don't know, out of context, I'm not really sure, but
it was basically favorite fictional friendship. We were trying to do ones that's not like oh, I ship it, if you know what I mean, like it was ones that you genuinely believe in the friendship,
but I just mean like I'd have to sit down and think about it. And now that Scott and Stiles have been put in front of me, I'm like, yeah, of course. But I mean, I don't know, like I think their friendship has been really strong throughout the series. There are certain moments, Motel California, the scene around the MRI machine, pretty much all of season 6A, huge, huge, huge moments for their friendship. And their constant referral to each other as their brother just always punches me right in the heart. I really do love it. So yeah, definitely shout out to them. I think that they are great.
The one where like evil Stiles was coming about and Scott was just like, do I kill this thing? Is this what? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It had a lot of feels in it. I'm still not caught up on Teen Wolf, and I don't know if I'm going to, because they were barfing up birds and I was done. I was like, I can't. I literally need to stop here.
Oh God. Season 6A has been my favorite season of the entire series so far.
Yeah.
If that's any incentive.
I mean, maybe I should just skip forward a little bit and see how that hunky Pretty Little Liars brother comes about. I know he's kind of evil, so.
Oh God.
He is delicious.
Amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
We love him, so yeah.
I can only imagine.
Like, I don't know. So yes, it's obviously a very important one objectively, but despite my dedication to Teen Wolf, it never got under my skin in the way that some of the ones I mentioned did. It's like, yeah, it's good. The end. I don't know. It never had the episodes that were about the trauma. They still upset me, but I don't know. It's just for some reason it just never quite got in there with me. For some reason, I don't know why. Anyway,
well, we'd more than welcome any more friendships if you guys want to write in about them. I'm sure we've forgotten about something.
Yeah, if you want to tell us favorite, you know, if you want to give us your answers to any of our questions of the day, that is always fantastic.
Yeah, definitely for even the one that we just did today, big step in LGBT representation in fiction. We'd more than welcome that. So we're going to end today on a lovely haiku that I'm not yet familiar with from Karen. So let's see if I get the reference. Karen, do you want me to read this? Do you want to read it yourself? Do you want Natalie? How do you want this performed?
I don't care. One of you guys can do it.
I think Natalie's going to get it, and I won't, so it might be more fun then if I try and guess it after. Because this feels
it's pretty straightforward.
Yes, it's just a thematic haiku about the content.
Oh my God, I just got it. Okay, I thought this was like styles being erased. Got it. No. The haiku to close out this episode of
The word, Mitch. Say the word,
Mitch. High conclusion is, do not erase me. I will kick your ass and smile, then tweet about it. So thank you, Karen. Thank you very much. And with that, we'll close out this very wonderful episode of Not About the Weather. We do appreciate any and all feedback. Of course, you can find our hub, and that's where you get at us. That's netwpodcast.com. Those are all of our things will be. And until next time, we will definitely catch you, but enjoy these long episodes, because maybe you won't get anything later on, and you'll regret ever being angry about them.
He's joking.
Okay.
I'm joking. Okay, we're good. All right, bye, guys. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Yes.
See, I just thought there was like an emergency, like a comet had just struck Earth.
Something was very wrong, said Natalie.
So no, I was like, oh.
You turned
into a robot and you glitched.
Yeah, it was so weird.
I literally thought this is it. The nuclear weapons have been sent out.